You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hey, it's Rick and Sherry from the Life in a Kilt podcast.
If you are a kilt wearer, a kilt lover, or simply like to gawk, come hang out with us every week on Life in a Kilt podcast.
We discuss kilt life, regular life, and everything in between and underneath.
We've got humor, interviews, sketch comedy, pop culture, beer reviews, even indie music. And we discuss it each week in a way that only we can.
Well, only the way I can.
Oh, hush. I discuss it so much better than
whatever.
You.
Anyway, discover the joys of kilt life without ever leaving the comfort of your own headphones. Kilts aren't required. But if you've got one, feel free to buckle up.
That's the Life in a Kilt podcast with Rick and Sherry every week on the ESO Network.
ESO Crew, wrap up the round table. ESO Crew, wrap up the round table. Wrap up the land is down. If I share a boat on the roof, rallying up the ladder. Stop to say a fact.
One, two, three.
ESO Crew, wrap up the round table. ESO Crew, wrap up the round table. ESO,
oh, hell yeah.
Hey, cats and kittens, it's time once again for the Pro Wrestling Roundtable. And I'm your host, John Morgan Neal. And as always, I'm joined by our producer and bell and whistleblower, Mr. Richard Yule. And, of course, our correspondent from the great wrestling with pop culture, Jonathan Williams. And this time we are joined by Chris Petrillo, Chris DiPetrillo. And we are going to talk again about action figures, this time focusing on Hasbro. And we also will have a special interview later, too, but we'll save that as a surprise.
This week on Myopia Defend Your Childhood. Myopia Defend Your Childhood is so named because I believe we are short-sighted on the things we watched as kids. So every week we watch a movie that one of the panelists grew up watching and see if they hold up, from comedy to cartoons or to action. And for this season, the last Thursday of each month, we're doing a TV show in our Myopia Morning segments. We watch Saturday morning cartoons and afternoon classics. So find us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. How will you stand when we put your past on trial? Myopia Defend Your Childhood is a member of the ESO Network and produced by Dude Letter Podcasting.
Welcome back to the Pro Wrestling Roundtable, and I'm now joined with real-life brothers, not storyline brothers, Jeff and Scott from the Fully Posable Wrestling Figure Podcast.
How you doing over there, Richard?
I'm doing great, guys. Like I said, you guys are real-life brothers, correct?
That is correct. Scott is 5 years my elder.
Yep. And we've been collecting wrestling figures since probably 85.
Yeah. So we've been doing this for 32 years straight, nonstop.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah. So, the Fully Posable Wrestling Figure Podcast is great. I've been a listener for a few months now.
Thank you.
Before we get into like how I found you guys, I guess, how long has the podcast been going?
We're coming up on our second year.
January 16, right?
January 25th or 26th.
Yeah.
Around there. It's coming up on its second year. We're about to hit our 100th episode. Just a lot of milestones coming up for us. A two-year anniversary and then 100th episode. So we've got a lot of stuff coming up.
Awesome. It's funny because that's basically when we started. The podcast had a kind of a previous life before us. John was still a part of it, but then we rebooted it back 2 years ago in January. So that's pretty funny that we started about the same time. I hate that it took so long to find y'all, but so a little bit of background on you guys, like growing up. What was the first wrestling figures you remember? I'm going to guess that it's LJN.
It started with LJN, and I'll have Scott.
Yeah, for sure it was LJN. Walking through, and I've told this story on our podcast, I don't even know how many times, but the Jimmy Superfly Snuka LJN figure is the first one that I ever saw, and I was actually in a Toys R Us looking for mask figures, and that really dates me. Because that was around.
I love Mask.
I did too. I was a huge fan of that line, and it was fairly new out at the time. And so I went looking for that specifically. And while I was hunting for Mask toys, I came across the big blue LJN cards, And the first one I saw was Jimmy Superfly Snuka. And I wasn't familiar with wrestling at all. My friends talked about it at school, but I never really got into it. I just kind of picked up the card and looked at it and was kind of admiring the figure. You remember, they were 8 inches tall, rubber. It was a heavy packaging. Mm-hmm. Turned it over, saw the other guys that they made in the line, and I'm like, oh, that's cool. You know, and I saw that they made a Hogan, so I'm looking for the Hogan, and I picked him up. I'm like, oh, these are awesome. Went up to my mom, and I'm like, Mom, can I get one of these? And she goes, no, no, no. We're here to look for that other thing you wanted, that mask. So please find that. We can get going. And I'm like, all right. So go back to school the following day. And I'm telling all my friends, yeah, Toys R Us had all these wrestling figures and they looked really cool. And so they were kind of filling me in because I was telling them who I saw. And they're kind of filling me in on who's who. And literally that Jimmy Superfly Snuka figure kicked off my love for wrestling and wrestling figures. And that's when it all started. And we've been collecting them ever since. I started watching the Saturday shows. And our parents were nice enough to, we call them the benefactors, were nice enough to start getting us into the LJN figures. They bought us all of them, and we've been hooked ever since, and that was 1985.
So wrestling figures actually got you into wrestling.
Yeah, one led to the other, absolutely. I wasn't familiar with the product at all. And, of course, you know, Hulkamania was huge, and he was teaming with Mr. T, and I watched the A-Team show all the time, but wasn't familiar with the wrestling product itself. But seeing that Jimmy Snuka figure and how colorful it was and seeing all the other guys in the line like Hogan and Big John Studd, and that instantly got me hooked, and I wanted to see what all the hype was about. So that next Saturday, I had Channel 2 on at 10 in the morning, and I'm watching the show and literally have been hooked ever since. We never got out of it, not out of wrestling, not out of the wrestling figures.
Wow, that's crazy. That's crazy because, I mean, I've been hooked on wrestling figures not quite as long, even though I'm old enough. I don't really remember the LJNs for some reason. I just they were something that completely went by me. I just
the LJNs were great unless you had a friend or a brother throw them at you, especially like a King Kong Bundy one. And if it hit you in the head, you were concussed immediately.
Or if, for example, if you had a younger brother who played with your figure sometimes that might chew off the fingers on, say, a Ricky Steamboat, that was awful.
We're not naming names, but
yeah, we won't name names here. But
We on our LJN episode that we did a few months ago, we had Ian Riccoboni from Ring of Honor on, and he told this story, and you can find that in the archives. He told this story about how he I can't remember exactly what happened. He might have went into further detail, but he dropped King Kong Bundy, and it broke his mom's toe.
I actually believe that, dude.
I believe it too. That was a heavy figure. I don't know how more Bundys didn't detach from the cards while they were sitting on the pegs.
I know, right? And that's the other thing, because, you know, nowadays figures are tied to the card, but those weren't.
No, they were just laying in there loose.
That adhesive between the card and the bubble, I don't know what they were using, but the
strongest glue ever.
Yeah, definitely. So then obviously, you know, y'all stayed with – what was y'all's feeling when you found out that the LJN line was discontinued, although you probably didn't. You probably were looking for them still, and all of a sudden the Hasbros popped up.
We had no idea, since this was before the internet.
Oh, sure.
We had no idea that the LJNs, because we used to go into Pro Wrestling Illustrated or that Wrestling Insider or whatever.
Yeah, it was PWI.
PWI. And they would always have figures that you could buy from the back.
Yeah, at a shop called The Wrestling Ring. They were back east.
Yeah, and we never saw them again after 1989. We're like, okay, when's the next set of figures coming out? And then all of a sudden, and we talked about this on our Hasbro show, all of a sudden, one night, we're watching Primetime Wrestling, and we see Gorilla and Bobby on TV, and there on their desks stands 4 inches of plastic, now known as the Hasbros. And literally, and this is before HD, Scott and I had our nose prints right up on the TV trying to figure out who was who, because they couldn't zoom in long enough on Gorilla and Bobby. And we're like, okay, that's Rick Rude. That's Hogan. That's definitely Hogan. You know, just stuff like that.
I think the biggest thing that bothered us was the lack of scale between the two. So you had all these new figures coming out in Hasbro, but you couldn't cross-play them with the LJNs. There was literally zero chance of that. But, yeah, I think we were too young to really be sad about the LJNs ending, because now we had this new thing, new figures to go out and hunt down. But like Jeff said, it was before the age of the internet, so we didn't even know that LJNs really had ended. We just knew that these Hasbros were out, and we had to go get them now.
Yeah, that was kind of crazy. I mean, it must have been by design where the Hasbros really did just take the place of LJN. You know, mm-hmm. they must have been working on the figures a few years prior to LJN, you know, losing the license, or at least a year.
Yeah, probably somewhere around there, because that Black Card series, the last one in the LJN series, or in the LJN line, that ended somewhere around 89, and by 1990 we had Hasbro. So you're right, it pretty much picked up where the LJNs left off, and then we got right into the Hasbros.
And that's like when Jax lost the license to Mattel back in 2010. It was like once Jax ended, Mattel was putting out their new stock almost immediately.
Yeah, there was barely even a gap between those.
Right.
That's true, I forgot about that. So, like, what was your, when y'all were growing up, what was your favorite Hasbro in that first series? What really sticks out?
The Macho Man, hands down.
Same for me.
Yeah, the Macho Man was just perfect. And if you hold that Macho Man up to any figure nowadays, people are like, okay, I may like the WrestleMania 7 defining moment Macho Man that's out, or that came out a few years ago, but that 4 inches of plastic still stands up to this day because that Macho Man was perfect.
Literally perfect.
Orange trunks, yellow boots, headband, sunglasses. It
even had a snarl on his face. Yeah. Like that, it just captured him perfectly.
Yep, that was Macho Man.
And he has my favorite pose that the Hasbros did.
Mine too. That
pose is just perfect. I love the way the legs are on that pose is perfect to me.
What was your favorite?
Out of that first series, I mean, so I talk about this later on in the episode where for some reason, like, the LJNs I missed out on, and I sort of missed out on the Hasbros as well. I don't know why. I mean, by the time the Hasbros came out, I was like 13. Uh-huh. So I was kind of in that phase of like, those are for kids, and I wasn't watching wrestling as much as before either. I had moved states, some inner turmoil family stuff happened, so I just, wrestling kind of lost me for a little bit, and so when the Hasbros came out, I was still lost, so, yeah, I think the Macho is great, but, mm-hmm. I mean, when I started working at a flea market in 95, so the line was probably already discontinued by then, but I would say the Hogan. Like, I just love Hogan so much, like, went back then, that I just always was drawn to the Hogan.
And that's perfect, man. We understand.
Yeah, it is a great Hogan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hated the, I think we talk about this later on too, with the Ultimate Warrior. That was series one as well, right?
With the green trunks?
Yeah.
Yep.
And it looks great, but I hate that pose. And I know you guys talk about it on y'all's show. the spring jumping action is just a nightmare to me.
Well, Mattel seems to love it.
With
their retros.
Right? I mean, that's all they do. I mean, for the first series, it wasn't too bad, but it looks like the second and third, whew, they are happy about that.
We're getting carried away with it.
When they're putting Goldberg in the spring action pose, okay, come on, guys.
Yeah.
I know. I mean, I guess you can do the spear, but, I mean, that's a little bit of a stretch.
It is. It really is. And then Triple H is in it, too, and you're going, what? Wait a second.
Oh, I know. Triple H being in it is the dumbest thing.
It's like Sting makes sense. Sting makes sense to be in that spring action.
Because you can do the splash in the corner. It makes sense.
Yeah, he jumps off the top rope. Okay, I get it. But Triple H and Goldberg, that's, okay.
Huge
enough.
Stretch. Yeah.
Isn't Seth in it, too?
Yeah, Seth kind of makes sense since he's a high flyer a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't argue that one too much. But Goldberg, why he's not in a gorilla press slam, I'll never know.
Yeah, that definitely made more sense. Like that Series 1 Hogan that you just mentioned would make way more sense for that Mattel Goldberg.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. What I liked about the, let's see, so Series 1, Andre is one of the tougher figures, and that Andre was way better than the LJN, in my opinion.
Agreed.
I mean, the LJN I mean, it captures a very, I mean, it, he did look like that, but for a very short amount of time.
Right.
And so this Andre was much better. What figures came out in Hasbro that were much more improved from the LJNs that you liked a lot better?
I agree with you 100% on the Andre. The Macho Man, I think, was great in both lines. The Hogan, especially that second Hogan that came out in the different pose in the LJN, it wasn't in like the flexing pose. It was more in like the Hogan one arm up flexing, and the other one was almost in like the down flex pose, and he came in a red and a white shirt. That one was awesome. And then that first series Hogan was great too. So I think Hogan and Macho were definitely two really good ones. But the most improved, I agree, on Andre. I think Axe absolutely was a huge improvement in that first series of Hasbro.
Can we say that the Rick Rude was much improved in the Hasbro compared to...
100% agree with that.
So it's kind of an inside joke, and that's what I love about y'all's show, is y'all do have these inside jokes. I mean, a lot because you are brothers, but the Rick Rude is funny in the LJN, whereas you guys complain that... I mean, he's in a pose where he's got, does he have like his thumbs in his pants or something? Or something
like Al Bundy style.
Yeah. And like, so you can't really, but y'all's complaint was you can't really wrestle with him. You couldn't put
right.
him in a wrestling hold or do anything. So,
you could do 50 tackles and that's it.
Yeah.
That's about it. You can get out of the LJN Rick Rude pose.
And that was kind of the bad thing about LJNs, because if they chose a bad pose like that, Ted Arcidi is another example. He had his hands at his side. What can you do with that? Because you can't lift the arms up. You probably couldn't rip an LJN if you tried.
Oh, you could.
But they wouldn't stay in place even if you tried to bend them up. So there wasn't much you could do with that. That was the beauty of the Hasbros, is they were to. Throw a little pun in, they were fully poseable. You could move them around. You could put them in different holds. You couldn't do that with the LJN. So I think that's definitely where Hasbro had a leg up.
Oh, definitely. And they had the actual actions of the figures, you know, the spring actions. Some were good, some were bad, but it was definitely improved over the LJNs.
And if you looked at the Hasbros, a lot of the actions made sense. Like Jake's spring punch arm. I didn't like the spring punch arm, but Jake would throw a punch.
Yeah.
And
you could use it for the short arm clothesline too.
Yeah, exactly. He would throw a good working punch, or as Scott just said, the short arm clothesline. So the action made sense. And that was the good thing about the Hasbros, and we were just talking about the Mattels. A lot of the actions don't make sense. Goldberg in a spring action pose, that doesn't make sense. But you have Warrior in a gorilla press, makes complete sense, because that was part of his finishing move.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, and even Warrior, I mean, Warrior was in the spring phase in Series 1, but, I mean, I guess you can do the same thing where he had that shoulder tackle.
Mm-hmm.
So, that sort of, you know, you can make it work, I guess. But I never understood Brutus in the spring.
Brutus in Series 1 is probably one of my least favorite Hasbros. And Scott mentioned this, I think it was on our Hasbro show. Hasbro would look at one of their original figures, like Brutus, and they're like, man, we really botched that one, so let's make a better one. And they put out another Brutus, and I want to say Series 3 or 4 or something like that.
Yeah, Series 3 or 4.
Without having the list in front of me. But if Series 3 or 4, they put out a better Brutus. He was in the white tights, and what was his action? It was the...
Yeah, you could lift his arms and smash him down.
Yeah.
And he came with the shears.
Yep. Yeah. So... They really did a great job of fixing a lot of the first figures that they might have gone, like the Boss Man. That's another one.
That's a great example, is that Boss Man figure.
They went in and they're like, okay, you know what? We messed up on Series 1 Boss Man.
Series 1 Boss Man, yeah.
Let's make a better one. And then they made a better one where his arm flexed out to the side, where you could actually do Boss Man's side slam.
Yeah.
His finishing move.
Yeah, excellent point. Yeah. So you guys mentioned it a little bit, but we'll go ahead and promote it now. You guys kind of – this all happened without us communicating at all, but mm-hmm. we had planned on doing our Hasbro show, And so I got in contact with Chris DiPetrillo, and he's like, "Oh, I'm doing." And I said, "Do you want to be a part of it?" And he said, "Yeah, that'd be fine." He said, "I'm actually doing a Hasbro show with the guys from Fully Posable at the same week." It was literally the same week. But he was more than happy to come on again and talk about it.
We love Chris over here, man. He's been such a huge proponent of the show. Him and I text all the time. Just a great, great guy, and cannot say enough good things about him.
And he's a great guest to have on too. He has great stories. He has a ton of knowledge. He's been collecting almost as long as we have. He's a lot of fun to have on. So I'm sure you had a blast with him on an interview.
Oh, absolutely. We've had him on a few times, and I have another podcast called the Nerdy Laser Podcast. I don't really promote it that much, so I'll take the opportunity to do it here. But he's kind of – I told him he's my unofficial co-host for that show because he's come on a few times, and we talk about Saved by the Bell. And we talked for 4 hours on Saved by the Bell.
Oh yeah, that's Chris right there, man. That is his topic. He'll go all day with you about Saved by the Bell.
Oh yeah, yeah. He loves some Saved by the Bell, and he is crazy knowledgeable about it.
Oh, his knowledge regarding it, just forget about it.
Yeah, and I mean it's kind of interesting that we bring him up just because he's with Figure Toy Company, and I own Joey Ryan, and it's just great.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great figure, and I want to own more of their figures because they're really, really good.
Yeah, the Joey Ryan I actually just purchased last night from Joey at a All Pro Wrestling show here in San Francisco.
I saw that on your Twitter.
And I got it signed in the paint pen, got a picture with him. Just great guy. Love the FTC figures over here. I know a lot of people are like, "Oh, Mattel's the greatest," and you know Mattel's killing it. Yeah, they are. But you know what? I'm not in a trash FTC. FTC is also doing really well on their figures. That Tama Tonga figure that they came out with earlier this year. Oh wow,
it's amazing. That,
the face paint on it. That's Scott and I kind of do a year end awards type thing. That figure's going to be in the top two, top three, possibly. It's not leaving that thing unless an amazing figure just all of a sudden hits that we weren't expecting.
Yeah, they knocked that one out of the park. And let's also give them props because they're giving us figures of guys that normally, unless you're with WWE, aren't getting wrestling figures.
Absolutely.
They gave us the first Kevin Steen. They gave us the first AJ Styles.
They gave us an updated Jim Cornette that was well-deserved.
Yeah, Blue Meanie. You know, they're doing a bunch of the ECW guys. Shane Douglas has just been added.
Blue Meanie, his figure is out of this world. That figure is so good. And that was Meanie's first figure, too. So
really?
That's Meanie's
first action figure.
So as Scott said,
gosh.
Yeah, not even in the ECW line. So as Scott said, they're giving us guys that we have never had before, guys that we never even thought we were going to get.
And they're getting better, too. If you compare them to their first series of ROH, every line or every figure that they come out with is getting better than the previous one. So, yeah, FTC is definitely one to keep an eye on. We're excited about their line.
Yeah, I agree with you, with them getting better and stuff. The Joey Ryan, and what I love about it, and this is something I wish Mattel would do a little bit sometimes, is that you can actually take it out of the package and put it back in and do whatever you want.
Yeah, we often have the argument about mint on card. In fact, this past week's show, we had talked about it, the mint on card versus loose argument. Well, with FTC, you get the best of both worlds. Because you can snip that little zip tie, it's a bubble, you just pop the bubble open, take the figure out, you can admire all the work that they did on it, then you can put it right back in the bubble and seal it back up. They even sell those zip ties, so if you really want to have it, like, as original state, you can buy that zip tie and just zip your figure back up.
They sell the zip ties?
Yes, they do.
That is amazing.
Yeah, they got you covered.
That is genius, and that honestly shows how much they think about stuff like that, and how much they listen. Yeah. You know, to people, because I had Joey, because I was fortunate enough to meet Joey at a show just about 20 days ago, I think, and I took it out and I had him sign the actual cardboard part.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Of it, because I thought, well, I'll just have him sign the cardboard, because blister, you know, you guys, you guys have gone on and talked about paint pens and stuff, which is mind-blowing. I never thought about that, because Sharpies on those blister packs, they tend to fade or scratch off.
Yes. I have a Roddy Piper autograph up on my wall that's the autograph is almost gone. There's one.
Well, it's 12 years old. You got it in 05.
I did get it in 05, but if I had a paint pen, if I would have known about paint pens at that time, it wouldn't be fading right now. I'll give you another example. I have a Strike Force 2-pack, and I had Tito autograph it, and I was like, oh, I'll just get Rick Martel to sign it. But I haven't had an opportunity to get Rick Martel to sign it in 12 years because I got that one signed in 2005. That autograph is completely gone.
Wow.
Because the Sharpies just don't hold up. On some they will, but on most of them, like, you'll see them start to fade like right away. So these paint pens have been a godsend to us, and I'm trying to reach out to these guys saying, look, you have a huge market over here. You know, you need to tap into us because we'll set you on the right path.
Yeah, we'll push you like crazy. But I've got an example. I went and saw Finn Balor this past, was it May?
Yeah.
I think we saw Finn Balor in May, and we had paint pens with us, and Finn had Sharpies. Well, I was talking to my daughter or talking to Jeff or something, and I pushed two figures in front of Finn. He signed one in silver Sharpie, which I was supposed to ask him to do the paint pen instead of that, but by the time I got to ask him, he had already signed it. And my other one, I caught him in time, and he signed in a paint pen. If you put those two side by side, or you put them up on your wall, huge difference between the two. You can barely see the silver Sharpie autograph, but the paint pen just pops. So if you're an autograph hound like we are, even having them displayed between paint and Sharpie is a huge difference. I highly recommend the paint pens.
Yeah, that's great. And I saw you you had gotten it signed in a pink color for Joey, and that just really, really pops.
That was actually kind of funny, because I went up to Joey's merch table last night. In fact, I was just telling Scott this story right before we started recording. I said I went up to Joey's merch table, and I said, okay, we want to get two micro brawlers, the wrestling buddy, Joey Ryan wrestling buddy, and the FTC figure. And he goes, would you like me to autograph the FTC figure? And I said, yes, please. So he grabbed the Sharpie. I'm like, hold on. I had the paint pen in my back pocket. And I pulled out the pink paint pen, and he goes, oh, okay, cool. And so he signed it perfectly right on that bubble. I was like, okay.
Yeah, once you make that switch over to paint pens, you're not going to go back to Sharpies.
Yeah, you'll pay the extra.
You do have to take your own, because no wrestler is going to have Sharpies with them, or the paint pens.
Actually, Kevin Nash has some.
Oh, really?
Kevin Nash, when we were in Dallas last year for WrestleMania 32,
mm-hmm.
when we were in Dallas, Kevin Nash was collecting paint pens and signing people's stuff with paint pens.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
It looks way better.
It looks so good.
Yeah, and I bet that's going to catch on eventually. I bet in a few years people are going to just start having people sign stuff, and I bet wrestlers are going to carry their own paint pens.
Well, we didn't even know about paint pens until 2005, and we were at an autograph signing with Paige, and we were kind of – I saw this girl go up, and she put down a pen, and Paige autographed it, and I was like, whoa, what is that?
2015.
Yeah.
Paige was like 8, I think, in 2005.
Oh, whoops. It's 2005? I'm stuck on 05. John Cena, right? He won the title from JBL the other day, right?
Yeah.
WrestleMania 21, just a few months ago. No, I'm sorry. But anyways, we were kind of standing there, and we looked, and I was like, what is that pen? Because it just popped on the figure. And so the girl walked away, so I was like, what was that? And so Scott informed me, he's all, dude, those things are called paint pens. I was like, what are those? And so all of a sudden my mind was blown finding these.
Yeah, and I think those are the last figures we got signed with Sharpies.
Yeah.
Because she signed in a black Sharpie, and after that everything's been paint pens.
Everything.
Wow. Yeah, you kind of mentioned, I talk about Joey Ryan all the time. People probably get tired of it, but he was really my favorite wrestler right now. I mean, I got to meet him in person, and that was great. And he is so different from in the ring, Joey Ryan, than when you meet him. Like, it's just crazy. Like, he's such a humble guy. Like, and he's quiet, you know, he's just completely different. But that wrestling buddy, I mean, he did not have that when he didn't really have anything when he came with us except for t-shirts and pictures. He didn't even have any figures on his table.
Oh, you know what? I think with the Cow Palace, because it was in San Francisco at the Cow Palace last night, with it being a pretty big show, I want to say there was about 1,500 to 2,000 people there last night. with it being that big, I was hoping he would bring more merch. In fact, I tweeted him the other day hoping he would have his FTC figure, and he says, I plan on having it there. I was like, perfect. Sure enough, he did.
Cool. Yeah, he had I bought a t-shirt from him. It looks like the Lucha Underground logo, but it has Joey Ryan sunglasses and a lollipop.
<That's awesome>. Love Joey.
Yeah. Hopefully he'll be on season 4. I know he's been in Lucha before. I don't know about season 3 if he was in season 3 or not. I know he's in season 2, but season 4 just got announced. I don't know if you guys follow Lucha.
Jeff does.
I follow it. I've been following it loosely the past year. Like season 3, I still need to get caught up on. Excuse me. And I need to sit down and watch season 3. I was watching all the way up to season 2. I missed a big portion of season 3.
Is 3 on Netflix?
Not yet.
Okay.
It just finished, so I'm sure it will be soon. The problem with 3 is there's so many episodes.
Uh-huh.
Me and Chris have talked about this. Like, I was invested in it, and then after, like, episode 10, I started fading. And then, I mean, I think there's, like, 30 episodes in it.
Whoa.
It just kept going. I mean, it never stopped.
It's like a spot fest.
I know. But so back to Hasbro's, to kind of wrap that conversation up, let's go through. And I know you guys on your podcast, like you said, you had Chris on. I always want to call him Zach because of his Twitter handle.
Zach Malibu.
Zach Malibu.
Yes. But so I have to think about it before I say his name. But you guys had Chris on, and then who else did you have on?
We've had on comedian Marty DeRosa, which I can't say enough good things about that guy. He is just one of a kind. He's awesome. We've had Zach Ryder on. We're in the works to try to get more other names on there. We've had Brian Breaker, who's a Midwest independent wrestler, just a good friend. He's a guy that you can just call a friend, and he's another one I just cannot say enough good things about. We've had Matthew Goldberg, who's a very popular wrestling figure photographer. I think that's about and Michael Moore, who writes for
DW Torch.
Yep.
Yeah,
so we've had a few on.
So you brush over the fact that you had Zach Malibu, or Zach Ryder. Geez, see?
Oh,
You brush over the fact that you had Ryder on, but that was amazing. Like, that's how I found you guys. Chris had retweeted that you guys had him on, so that's actually the first episode I listened to, and then I went back and listened to them all. And and so that was a great interview. I mean, he gave you all a big chunk of time. And was that interview, how did you get him on?
Thank you to one of our listeners. He messaged Zach, and he knew Zach through the Wrestling Figs message board. And he messaged Zach, and he goes, hey, there's a lot of people wanting you on the Fully Posable Wrestling Figure podcast. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, I'm sitting at home watching a San Francisco Giants game, and here comes the tweet that says, hey, Fully Posable, I hear you want me on your show. Now, I'm sitting there like, oh, there's the blue check mark, you know?
Yeah, you can't verify this isn't some dude.
So instead of responding to Zach, the first thing I do is call Scott. I'm like, dude, check our Twitter. Like, I'm going crazy. And so Scott goes, message him back. I'm like, oh, yeah, I got to do that.
Because by no means are we, like, professionals at all. At heart, we're still wrestling fans and figure collectors. So when Zack Ryder reaches out to you, that's a major deal.
Yeah.
Major deal. I lost a lot of sleep before that interview, I'll tell you that.
And so we messaged Zach back and said, we'd love to have you on. And he followed us, and we kind of worked everything out. But it all happened within 2 days.
Literally, from the tweet to the interview was a 2-day turnaround. And we interviewed him on a Sunday morning. And, yeah, it was crazy. He gave us 30 minutes, which was 30 minutes more than we ever expected to get with Zack Ryder. And he just filled us in on his whole collection, which, if you have a chance, follow him on Instagram, because his collection is second to none. Not only is he the most well-known action figure or the wrestling figure collector out there, but his collection, it can't be beat. It can't be touched. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah. He's got prototypes now and just everything.
Yeah, in fact, on WWE's Twitter, they sent out a little video that he had done showing off his Greg Valentine Rhythm and Blues prototype, nice. Along with the card back that shows Rhythm and Blues back there. So if you're familiar with this at all, just to brush over it, Toys R Us put out an ad that showed the Rhythm and Blues characters on there, or figures, but they never actually came out, but there were some prototypes out there. The one that Zack Ryder has in his collection is the one that was shown in that ad.
Well, now he has two Greg Valentine.
Yeah, three. One with the broken arm, and he also has the two-up of that, which two-ups are basically exactly as they say, a two-up. So if you take a Hasbro figure, it's two times the size, but it's what they use to kind of scale the actual Hasbro figure. Then they shrink it down. He's got the Greg Valentine Rhythm and Blues and the two-up as well. So like I said, his collection is above and beyond anybody's that I've ever seen.
That's crazy. And honestly, coming from a podcaster and like somebody who sets up interviews, and Jonathan helps set up a lot of interviews, knowing that you guys did it in 2 days is insane.
It is, man. We, from the time he messaged us to the time we got done recording, it was a 2-day turnaround. I got home from work, sat down, started watching that ball game, and in came the tweet, and Sunday afternoon, it was all wrapped up.
But there were a lot of text messages in between you and I. Yeah. We're bouncing questions off of each other. We're making lists. It was crazy.
And it was actually funny, too, because the night before, my girlfriend and I were driving around thinking of questions. It was like kind of like a mental, okay, I'm driving. I need to think of questions. Focus on the questions. No music, no podcast. Just start thinking.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah, we've interviewed a few people where I get a little bit of starstruck in a way, because, you know, these guys, we see them on television, we never think, I mean, because you guys are probably like us. I mean, we're just fans, like,
exactly.
I mean, I'm not a media guy. I mean, Jonathan has a little bit of experience in that, and he's met a lot of people, but I mean, for me personally, like, I'm really shy when I go up to people and talk to them. And we had AJ Styles on. We had talked about this before the show, and that was kind of the same thing. Is like, you know, we got 10 minutes with him, and that was 10 minutes longer than I ever thought I'd talk to AJ Styles. But then what's amazing is you talk to these guys, and they're just normal. Like, they're just happy to talk to you. I mean, we've never had a bad experience as far as talking to the wrestlers.
Yeah, and it's funny that you mentioned that, because you had mentioned Joey earlier, Joey Ryan, how he is different in person than he is on TV. One that Jeff and I talk about all the time is Kevin Owens. We started following Kevin Steen back in ROH, and Jeff actually reached out to him through an email and asked him for a Christmas present, do you have anything laying around that you'd be willing to sell? Well, Kevin Steen sent Jeff back a list of what he had, and for Christmas, I believe that was in 2012, You got me the shirt that Kevin Steen wore against El Generico at Final Battle 2010, the knee brace that he wore, an autograph picture, just a whole bunch of stuff.
Wow.
It was amazing, and it's now all sitting in a humongous box frame up in my hallway. But ever since we started talking with Kevin Steen, he has been the most amazing person. Like, you see him on TV, he's the biggest heel you'd ever think existed. Like, next to Roddy Piper, I think he's one of the best heels ever. But in person, and how he deals with his fans, night and day to that character. He is just one of the nicest wrestlers, if not the nicest wrestler that we've ever met.
Wow, yeah, that's good to know. I like hearing stories like that. And I feel like the guys that are like 35 in that range, like, they were fans of wrestling just like we were. They just happened to get into the sport. You know, and so I think a lot of them carry that over.
Yeah, how many times do you hear a lot of wrestlers say, I sat down, I've been watching it all my life, and I knew right then I needed to be a pro wrestler. You just hear it so many times. And they went in, went to the schools, they took the bumps, and look where they're at now.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of crazy to think that that it's not that easy, but like, if you have that passion and you follow it, I mean, a lot of times it will work out.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just never had the passion to get beat up in the middle of a ring, I guess.
When I used to work for All Pro Wrestling, I went into the ring, I took a bump, and I'm like, yeah, I'm good.
That's great. So let's wrap up here with the Hasbros, since our episode is about Hasbros. So we've gone through the favorite. Let's list your top three, and your bottom three, if you can. Ooh, real quick.
Good question.
I say that real is quick. A good question. You can do less than that, but let's just name out a couple of your favorites and a couple of the ones you hate. Is there one that stands out that you absolutely can't stand?
Yeah, Ric Flair.
Ric Flair.
We hate talking bad about Ric Flair figures, but yeah.
Yeah, we love Ric Flair, but that particular Ric Flair, I don't think that they. There's something about the face on it that throws it off, and then the pose that they put him in, which is the same one that's used for Rick Rude in Series 1, I don't think was the best choice. You can still kind of do the figure four with him, because his legs are kind of spread a little bit, but overall, I just don't like that Ric Flair figure. He's probably my least favorite Hasbro ever.
With Ric Flair, I would also have to say the Series 1 Brutus Beefcake. The facial expression they also gave him looked like someone that's cleaning their house at 2 a.m. in the morning, you know?
Yeah. He might be on something, allegedly.
Allegedly.
Sure. Really, the saving grace of that figure is that he has his fingers in the cutting.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. He's got them spread apart, like holding up the two. That was a good touch.
Okay, we need one more.
One more worse? Man.
Maybe Series 1 Boss Man?
You know, I never liked the Ricky Steamboat.
But you know what?
Was it because you couldn't take the headdress off?
That was definitely part of it, but I wasn't a big fan of the dragon gimmick.
Yeah.
And I hated that costume. And I think while I hate saying that, cause I am a huge, like, Ricky Steamboat is my favorite wrestler ever. So it's hard for me to hate his figure, but I think that would probably be one that I actually really don't like at all. And like you mentioned, the headdress can't come off. You almost need that back piece accessory that came with it to really complete them, but you're not going to do that when you're wrestling with them in the ring. So I think I would put Ricky Steamboat up there as one of my least favorites.
One other one that I want to throw out also is the Macho Man, where he had the hat and...
Oh, yeah, the white jacket.
With the tassels.
Yes. Yes.
I forget what series that is. I want to say 3 or 4, but that one was never really my favorite.
No.
After they nailed the first two Macho Mans, the Macho Man and then the Macho King, I mean, they did a fantastic job on those two figures.
Yeah.
And then to come out with that one, you're like, oof.
Yeah, it was almost announcer Macho Man.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's really what it was.
Top three
Macho Man's definitely in there for me.
Bret Hart Series 8 red card with the silver shades.
Oh, it's good. So good.
That's my favorite figure of all time between LJN, Hasbro, Galoobs, Jax, Mattel's, Toy Biz.
Your favorite wrestler, though?
Of all time, yeah.
Yeah, I've kind of picked up on that. Have you ever gotten to meet him?
Yeah, exactly. But that's my favorite figure of all time. I just cannot say enough good things and how well they did that figure.
The Nasty Boys.
Ooh, good call.
Yeah, the Nasty Boys are two of my favorite Hasbros. They just absolutely nailed them. And I've talked about this on our show. I'm not a big fan of figures having entrance gear on or sunglasses or anything like that, but exceptions are made when they're as good as that Macho Man and when they're as good as that set of Nasty Boys. Those figures, they nailed them.
You actually have a good purpose. If you don't mind, Richard, Scott actually has a good story regarding the Nasty Boy figures.
Oh, no, go for it.
Yeah, so we from Series 1 on, we had to have every single Hasbro figure made. So when the Tag Team Series came out, the second one, which was the Nasty Boys and LOD, we started tracking those down, and we were able to find LOD at a local Toys R Us. But for some reason, the Nasty Boys never showed up. I couldn't find them anywhere. I couldn't find them at Targets, Toys R Us's. Nobody had them. So I actually called Hasbro to their customer service line. I forget how I even tracked down that number. It might have been on the back of the package or something because we saved the card backs. I actually called Hasbro direct and asked them if they sold the figures direct through their company. And she said while they don't, they could provide a list of people that do sell them that are local to us. So I gave her my address, and she brought up like probably about 15 different stores that sold Hasbros. So I literally started with number one and started going down the list and was able to find a spot in Fresno, which from where we were living at the time in San Leandro was about a 3-hour drive. Well, there was no way in the world that I'd be able to talk my dad into making a 3-hour drive just to get two wrestling figures. So I called the place, told the guy who I was looking for, because guy answered the phone, told him who I was looking for. And he goes, well, let me go check and see who I have. So he was gone for maybe 10 or 15 minutes, and I'm figuring he probably forgot that he had somebody on hold. But sure enough, he comes back on, and he goes, okay, so I think I might have found who you're looking for. He goes, they're called the Nasty Boys, right? And I said, yeah, there's two of them on the card. They're both wearing black. He goes, does one of them look like Brian Bosworth? And I said, yes. I said, that's it. That's the one of the guys. And he goes, perfect. I have him here. And I go, okay, there's no way I can talk my parents into making a trip down there to pick him up. Do you think you could ship him? He goes, yeah, no problem. Let me give me your address. Give me your credit card info and I'll send him out. So I got my mom's credit card info. And that was the only set of Hasbros that I wasn't able to find in the store were the Nasty Boys. I actually had to have those shipped, but all the other ones came from stores. But yeah, those were probably our hardest track downs were the Nasties.
Wow, that's crazy. That is a cool story. I wish wish I could find somebody to get those Series 2 Mattel retros for me.
You and I are in the same boat. I can't find them either.
Oh, they are nowhere to be found over
here. I'll tell you, right now on Walmart.com, I checked earlier this morning, they have four of the six. The two that they don't have, unless you want to pay $18.99 through Ringside for them, is Kane and Triple H. The other four they have available right now for $10 each.
Oh, nice, nice. That Kane I want so bad to put with my Undertaker.
Me too.
The Kane is fantastic. The Kane is good.
Yeah, he's the home run of Series 2 for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and so I also want to get, before we go, I could talk to you guys forever, I feel.
Like I told you earlier, we don't shut up, dude. Talk pickles all day.
But and this rumor has gone around before, but it seems to have picked up steam the past few days. You might know what I'm getting ready to say, but so there's an idea that Hasbro might be buying out Mattel.
Yes.
That just happened yesterday, and it was in the Wall Street Journal, I believe.
Yeah, and it you're right. It did come up before, and we thought it was going to be a done deal, and then all of a sudden it died off. And then, yesterday, all of a sudden, it's right back in the news again like it's going to happen.
Yeah, I actually have the screenshot right here. It says that reporting via undisclosed sources through the Wall Street Journal, Hasbro has been in talks to take over, merge with Mattel. As Scott just said, they've been rumored before, but apparently has fired back up recently. So, fingers crossed.
Yeah, we may actually get real Hasbros again.
Yeah.
Yeah, wouldn't that be crazy? I was wondering if you guys were happy about it, or I don't know what to feel about it. Because I don't know what would change. I mean, because I love the Elites, and I want the Elites to continue. Of course, they've done the line so long. I mean, they really have covered... They've covered everybody, but in saying that, now they're covering people that I never thought we would get.
Yes.
You know, like so Shockmaster?
Shockmaster, Shark.
Yeah.
Isaac Yankum.
Isaac Yankum. I mean, I want a whole Dungeon of Doom set. I want a full set and everything.
I think at this point you might be seeing that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we could have Zodiac not too far. I mean, I've always joked about it, but, I mean, I think if things continue the way they have been with Brutus and Ed Leslie, with Mattel, I mean, I think we'll get Zodiac in the next 2 years.
Easily. We definitely could.
Yeah, I mean, I think that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be. I mean, really, I'll take a repaint. I mean, at this point.
Regarding the Hasbro and Mattel merger, it kind of is exciting. And if Hasbro buys them, Hasbro's smart enough not to eliminate the Elite line, because they know that's the moneymaker right there.
Yeah.
Especially the Elites, the Defining Moments. Hasbro's smart enough to know, okay, the money's in the Elites and the Defining Moments, so yeah, those aren't going anywhere.
But I wonder if they'd be inclined to grow that retro line, considering that these are based on the figures that they originally put out in the 90s. Are they going to expand that roster out to guys that we want to see? Like, our dream is to see the Orange Card series, which was that rumored – it was the one that was supposed to come after the Green Cards.
Absolutely.
Which was the last series of Hasbro. There was an Orange Card series rumored after that. I would love to see Mattel or Hasbro actually put out that Orange Card series. That would be the ultimate for me. And then to get them in the actual drawings that they had all set up and everything, that would be amazing.
So in the Orange Card series, it was supposed to be Men on the Mission – excuse me, Men on a Mission – Diesel, Jeff Jarrett.
Bastion Booger,
I think, was rumored.
American Lex,
yeah.
Oh, and an updated Undertaker without hat.
Yeah, without the hat.
Oh, that would have been awesome.
Yeah.
The Jeff Jarrett, I don't know if that would ever happen, but that would be cool to get an old school Jeff Jarrett in
his absolutely.
Well, WWE's helping him out through his rough go around right now.
Yeah.
So maybe, fingers crossed, maybe we can get that cowboy gimmick, Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, I'd also like to see Target get exclusives on these for their Hall of Fame series that they do for Mattel. If they could get Hall of Fame retro figures.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah, these are just the things we'd like to see that line continue down the road with, are just these cool. I mean, could you imagine a Rock and Roll Express set of Hasbros?
Oh, that'd be great.
Oh, I'd be in heaven.
Yeah, yeah. But let's not do a retro Hall of Fame Tito Santana, please.
Thank you. thank you.
Poor Target Tito.
He's so lonely, but they never drop the price. If they just drop him down to like $10, I'd probably buy him.
Yeah. Well, we've actually had some people say, why don't they just bring in Tito Santana to do an autograph signing? A lot of people are going to go and wipe up those pegs to get the figure signed.
They'll sell the remaining 10 they have in stock.
Yeah. Yeah, that one is sad. It really does sit on the shelves.
And what sucks is that Tito's such a nice guy to meet in person, too.
Oh, yeah, I would say so, yes. I've never met him, but I bet he does seem like one of the nicer guys.
I've met him twice, and I met him in San Jose one time and in Dallas for WrestleCon. And it was so cool because we had just gotten Scott Hall's autograph. We got in the line for Kevin Nash, and I ran over to Tito to get the Target Tito autograph that we're actually talking about it. And I went to get it autographed, and I was like, thank you, Tito. And I went to walk away. He goes, are you having a good time? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm having a great time. And he started asking me questions, and then I started telling him about how I cried when Strikeforce lost the belts to Demolition at WrestleMania 4. And
this is a true story.
And his handler and him began to laugh at me, but that's okay.
Well, guys, I really want to thank you for coming on. So, Fully Posable, it premieres every Sunday, correct, with new episodes?
Yep, drops on iTunes, fullyposablepodcast.com, SoundCloud, Stitcher, wherever you can get your podcast from. It drops over there. Just subscribe to us on your device on iTunes, and it'll just drop to your device every Sunday. And you can follow us on Twitter at fullyposable and Instagram fullyposablewfp.
Yeah, and I love the format you guys use. You got the Godfather's hat, which I love. And then I really enjoyed the Bendems series that you went through. You went through the entire Bendems line for WWF.
We did. That was a lot of fun going through those Bendems.
They're overlooked, I think, when a lot of people talk about wrestling figures. I thought that they did a really, really good job with what they were given and the format that they had. I loved it. And they added the little touch like the drawings of the guy on the back of the package. And on the backs of every figure, it had their autograph kind of embossed into the back. And not a lot of people realize that, but I think that line's really overlooked. I thought a majority of their figures were really well done.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought that was some of the best packaging
that
we've ever had for wrestling figures, to be honest. Like, I thought it was the most fun. It was the most eye-catching. I loved it.
And to kind of tie those back to Hasbro, I think the main figure that was missing out of Hasbro, especially towards the end, was Diesel.
Yeah.
He came up in about 93 is when he started to get really big. 94, he was in full gear, and Hasbro never had one. But the very first series of the Just Toys Bendems, they had a Diesel. And they were so close in scale to the Hasbros that you could actually take those Just Toys, throw them into your Hasbro ring, and suddenly you had a Diesel to play with, which I thought that was great. Being in scale with the Hasbros, which was the biggest line at the time, I thought was a smart move on their part.
That's another thing I like about your all's podcast is, like, you talk about actually playing with these figures. You know, so much I'm kind of consumed with collecting. I mean, I'm 40 years old. I don't have any kids, so I don't play with the figures much. Not when anybody.
So we have the video games.
Yeah, I know, right? And So, yeah, it's cool to hear y'all's guys' enthusiasm about how y'all used to and such.
Every summer with the LJNs, we would sit down Indian style in our parents' middle tier of the house and just play with wrestling figures every night. And it never stopped. Like, you would book your card and you would have your matches, and it was some fun memories. I mean, you would get up and your legs would basically give out because you were sitting Indian style for 3 hours. But but I mean, it was just, it's one of those memories that just kind of sends you back to a happy place. You know?
And it just takes literally holding one of the LJNs or one of the Hasbros and all those memories flood back. And it's just, yeah, it is the nostalgia part of it. But even going back and looking at some of those figures, they did such great work on those.
The Greg Valentine LJN is one of my favorites of all time. It's just the perfect pose, the perfect blonde hair.
And he told you how great it was, too.
Yeah, when we met him in San Francisco, he actually kind of pulled me aside. He's like, you don't know how much I love this figure. And because we still had it carded.
Oh, wow.
And he's like, you don't know how much I love this figure. And he just started talking to me about it. And I was like, this is great. You know, Greg Valentine's talking to me about his figure. This is awesome.
Well, that's great. Yeah, I highly recommend the podcast. Even honestly, like, even if for non-collectors out there, even if you don't really care about figures, it's still an entertaining show. There's so much information about it. I know people, like, only listen to stuff that they like necessarily or that they grew up with or whatever, but I just think y'all's show is great, and, you know, I hope y'all get some other wrestlers on, because I know there's a lot of wrestlers nowadays that are fans, and so maybe a Curt Hawkins, maybe?
We'll see. We can't tip our hand too far, but yeah, stay tuned, because we do have those special episodes coming up.
Yeah, because that, I mean, I know there's a lot of wrestlers that are collectors, so I hope that Zach was just the tip of the iceberg, and I really appreciate you guys coming on our show.
We thank you, Richard. This was awesome, man. I'm looking at the counter. It's about an hour one. It feels like 20 minutes.
Yeah. Thank you for the kind words, too. We appreciate you having us on.
All right, guys. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Richard. WWF figures give you the fury of the Hitman. But the bite of the Bulldog. Look, it's laying down the wall. The Undertaker will bury those stiffs. Not with these WWF figures running wild. Each sold separately. Dig it?
Yeah, we've been wanting to do this episode for a little bit, but just trying to get people on, and Chris stated that he was a fan, so he was nice enough to come on. And we're talking about Hasbros. They were the line after LJN. They transitioned from LJN to Hasbros, which is a much different line than the LJNs. I mean, the LJNs were big blocks of rubber. And, you know, they didn't function at all. Some of them had terrible poses that you couldn't even play well with them. So when it went to Hasbros, it just changed the game, really. It went into more action figures. So before we get too much into it, I guess I wanted to get your guys' opinion on, or get your guys' story on how you came across Hasbros. And we'll start with Chris.
Sure. So my first experience with Hasbro, or my first seeing them, was in the JCPenney holiday catalog, Christmas catalog, back in the day before the days of the internet and everything, the holiday season. Big stores, big department stores would always send out the big catalogs, the big holiday books, and some stores still do this to an extent, places like Toys R Us. But JCPenney had a gift set of the Hasbro ring, which was coming with Hulk Hogan and Macho Man figures all together. So, of course, being the huge wrestling fan that I was and in dire need of new wrestling figures since I had pretty much gotten all the LJNs that I could handle, I circled it 3 million times and pointed arrows to it and highlighted it and everything I could to get my grandmother's attention. And lo and behold, didn't even have to wait until Christmas. I was actually given the set about a month before Christmas. And I can actually remember the order in which I got the first series in. That's how, you know, beloved my Hasbros were to me. I remember getting the set with Hogan and Macho Man. About a week after that, my grandmother came home with Rick Rude. And the week after that, Jake the Snake. And then the week before Christmas, we were at the mall visiting Santa. The kids were taking their Christmas pictures and stuff. And we went into a KB toy store. And my grandmother bought me the Ultimate Warrior and Akeem. So before Christmas even hit, I had half the set and wound up having not the entire set until years later when I worked at Figures Toy Company. But through the years, some great collecting experiences, got pretty much every guy I wanted. There is a sad story concerning one of the rarer figures that I can go into. Not a depressing sad story, kind of a funny sad story. but Hasbro is probably my favorite wrestling line of all time, and the Mattel Retros have got me hook, line, and sinker. I've been going after all those, starting with Series 1, and just started getting the second series this week.
Nice. Yeah, we'll talk about those as well. Jonathan, how about yourself?
I don't have as elaborate a story, but these are definitely my favorite wrestling figures of all time. For whatever reason, when it comes to off the air, like John was just saying off the air, I collect lots of different types of action figures and toys. But with wrestling figures in particular, for some reason, I've always liked the cartoonish caricature style more so than the realistic. So the Hasbro stuff was my favorite. I like the Rumblers figures that Mattel did a few years ago. And then, just like Chris was just saying, the new retro line from Mattel has, you know, rekindled my interest in the original Hasbro figures. But I still have, I think, all of the Hasbro figures that I had when they came out, which I never had all of them, but I have, I think, two different versions of Ultimate Warrior. I've got Jake the Snake, Rick Rude, Hulk Hogan. Trying to remember the others. And then I always felt like the Galoob WCW figures were very similar, even though they were like small versions of the LJN figures. Yeah. In that they didn't have any articulation, but they were the same size as the Hasbro WWF figures, so they were kind of compatible. But I still have a Sting and a Ric Flair of those, and was kind of hoping that the retro figures, when they did WCW guys, that they would do them in that style, but so far they haven't done that.
Yeah, my story is actually boring. I never collected these when I was a kid. I was 12 when they came out, but I was living in North Carolina, and we just simply didn't have money, so I never got these. And when I grew up, I started collecting them a little bit, but I never got full into them. But I'd collected. I had a buddy who did customs, which in the 90s, these were very heavily customed. To be like, you know, they'd take a Hulk Hogan and make it an NWO Hulk Hogan, and some were vastly different. So I had a bunch of custom figures. I had a La Parca, I had a Rey Mysterio, like, and this guy was good. Like, he would use, like, real leather, and, I mean, so those, that was probably more my collecting of the customs. But I mean, obviously, I worked at a flea market, and so obviously I saw just about every figure come through. And I think I have an Andre and a Dusty somewhere, but I think I bought them for the sheer fact that they're collectible. It wasn't like I was buying the whole line or anything. I think I found them for a good deal.
I've got a Roddy.
You've got a Roddy?
I got a Roddy. Power nice. Punch. But Popper Punch Roddy.
Yeah, yep. That's something else I think is funny about the figures. So they all come with an action, but their actions are named. I mean, they weren't based off of anything that they actually did. Maybe a few were, but for the most part, they had these kind of ridiculous...
Roddy Popper punched people.
I know, but they had, like, the Hulk Hogan with Gorilla Press Slam and Ultimate Warrior with Ultimate Smash. The Andre the Giant had the Giant Jolt. Like, but the packaging, I think, is one of the better parts of these figures. I mean, too, because they were so eye-catching, and, I mean, it showed the action. It showed what the figure did, because you couldn't try it or anything, because most of the figures have springs and such. So what are y'all's thoughts on, maybe we'll go a little bit in order, but what are your favorites from Series 1? And these came out in 1990.
Roddy Piper.
Yeah. that wasn't Series 1.
Well, whatever. Wherever Series 1. That's
my
favorite.
It's 2. Chris, do you have any particular favorites from Series 1?
Yeah, I know that the spring action is not exactly the beloved action, and I know that more detailed Warriors came out, but I love the Series 1 Ultimate Warrior. I just love that figure. I love the Warrior in the green tights. I love the look on his face. The spring design didn't bother me because he always did like a little dive at the end of hitting all the clotheslines at the end of his matches, so I felt that it fit the Warrior. But I was just so happy to have a new Ultimate Warrior figure. Like, I kind of just geeked out for it, and that's my favorite one. That's actually one of my favorite figures ever, believe it or not. I just love that Ultimate Warrior figure.
Cool. Jonathan, do you have a particular favorite, or are you going to say Ultimate Warrior too, since he's your favorite wrestler?
From Series 1?
Yeah.
I'd have to say the Demolition guys were my favorites from Series 1.
Yeah, they were cool.
I like the Ultimate Warrior from Series 2 a lot better than the Series 1 Warrior.
I agree. I do agree with that one. But Chris can have his opinion.
I'm sticking to it.
The Big Boss Man was a good one, too.
Yeah, and so what was cool was some of these, like Big Boss Man came with a nightstick, and Jake the Snake Big came Snake. With a snake, and even Brutus came with the shears, which I've
and
never
Ted
seen.
DiBiase came with his $1 million belt.
That's true, yeah.
Yep.
I've never seen the shears for Brutus Beefcake, which is odd, because I think I've seen every figure in this line at one time. But I've seen a mint and on card Brutus, but I've never seen the accessories for these are very scarce now, I feel. I mean, you know, we're talking almost, 30 years or so, and so the accessories are just gone for the most part, I would think, especially if they're loose. I always liked Rick Rude. I always liked his action. I don't know why. He had that headlock sort of springy, so you could get him in a headlock and then punch him in the top of the head. I always thought
that. Yeah,
you
basically gave him a noogie.
Yeah.
See, but that action, though, it fit Rick Rude because if you're playing with them, like I was 9-10 years old at the time when they came out, so to do a Rude Awakening, that's perfect, but you couldn't do anything else. You could basically throw elbows and back elbows and very awkward leg drops because his legs were like way too far apart for like actually like kicking someone. But and then they gave that feature to Ric Flair later in the line. That was just an odd choice, I think.
Yeah, it was pretty odd. The Demolition figures, did they come with a mask, or was that not until the tag teams that they released?
The tag team set did. Axe and Smash did not individually, but Smash and Crush did in the tag team.
Smash and Crush, that's right.
Yep.
So that's Series 2. Series 2 introduced the tag teams, and so you had the Demolition, like Chris said, with Smash and Crush. The Bushwhackers, which I think they're great. I love the Bushwhackers. Like, and Jonathan's right, the cartoony versions of these, like, they are so fun because they didn't have to be accurate, but because they were so cartoony, they were completely accurate.
Oh, yeah! I just licked bones with that.
You got the Bushwhacker going? Are you doing the down and out blaster or the down and under pounder?
The down and under pounder.
But, you know, I was a huge Rockers fan, and I remember seeing these, and I still am not. I do not like these figures. What do you think about the tag teams? We'll start with Chris.
I was just happy to have Rockers figures because I was a huge Rockers mark when I was a kid. Looking back on it as the line went on, I think that the heel Shawn Michaels is by far a much better figure, and I actually think that the heel Shawn Michaels is one of the best figures in the line. The Bushwhackers, was never a huge fan, but I think that they really nailed the Bushwhackers. Love the Demolition with the masks, just and to have all three Demolition, because I was always a completist, even as a little kid. I mean, when we're little kids, obviously, you've got to have everything.
Let me ask you a question real quickly, just so I set the bar here. And I was not action freak related, but did you ever see them in the Sheep Herders?
Oh, yes, with the Fantastics and everything? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right, go ahead.
Yep.
That's right. Actually, yeah, because you come from the right territory. Go ahead.
Yep, yeah, because I think we even mentioned on my first appearance, the first wrestling I watched was World Class. Yes. So yeah, I was much more familiar with them as the Sheepherders, and maybe that's why I never really took to them as the Bushwhackers.
Right. That's what I was wondering. So go ahead.
Yep. But I think the design of them was excellent. I think that for the most part, the tag team sets were really good. I think the Rockers is probably the weakest of the tag team sets.
Yeah, I would agree. Jonathan, did you like the tag teams?
Again, I like the Demolition ones for the same reasons. That way I had all three of them, but only two masks.
I know. Yeah, that's kind of weird. Yeah. And I always thought the mask came with Smash and Axe, but it was actually with Crush. I always liked Crush's face paint.
Yeah, it was cool.
Crush had cool face paint.
I don't think I ever had the Bushwhackers or the Rockers figures, though I was at a convention this past weekend, Walker Stalker Con, and there was a vendor that had a bunch of these loose figures, and they had the Bushwhackers and the Rocker, or not the Rockers, Bret Hart. Did they do a Hart Foundation set, or were they individual?
No, they actually never did the Hart Foundation. They did Bret. They did two Brets. They did the Anvil, but he was in the blue MC Hammer pants from like the New Foundation era.
That's right.
Oh yeah.
And then they did Owen in the pants from the New Foundation era. So the only one in the actual Hart tights was Bret.
Oh, that's kind of a bummer. I didn't realize that, but yeah, I remember. I know the Anvil with the like the Owen pants. Yeah, that's kind of a bummer. They didn't put him in the pink and black.
And it would have been so easy too, because they gave Anvil the clothesline feature, you know, the arm extended clothesline feature that like Crush had and everything.
Yeah.
And they gave Bret like the suplex, but his arms were such where you could kind of bear hug or body slam a guy. And if they just flip flopped that body type and gave Anvil either the Hulkster hug body or that body that Bret had, and did another Bret with the clothesline, you've got your heart attack. Like, that would have been a perfect two-pack right there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. So, Series 2 had some different ones. I mean, Andre from the first series, like I was saying earlier, he's still a rare one. And in Series 2, you've got another rare one with Dusty Rhodes. And,
I've never seen him. I've never seen those. So, was he actually bigger than the other figures?
Yeah,
he was
slightly
bigger.
Yeah, they had the big bodies. Right. They each had the same same action. If I remember right.
He did. Yeah, they had the body where you kind of pulled back on him and he would jolt forward and hit you.
Yeah, but I mean, he was in the polka dots. I mean, black and yellow. So, which was obvious for the WWF era. One thing that I never really liked about these figures is, like, so Dusty has the open mouth, but the tongues were never painted, and the teeth were never painted, I don't think. But I know the tongues weren't. So you basically just had him open mouth with a tan tongue, which I always thought was weird.
That Dusty Rhodes figure, that's actually the semi-sad story, because, and I've told this before in other places, but like I said before, I was collecting the whole line. I needed to have everybody, and Hasbro is actually local here in Rhode Island. That's where Hasbro was based. So all the lines that Hasbro has made through the years, the stores around here have always had an abundance of stuff, from G.I. Joes to Transformers to WWF figures, and even the local stores, I mean, local drug stores were carrying Hasbro's back in the 90s. And there was a local department store that had just an end cap full of them. And I was there one night with my aunt, my sister, and my cousins, who were all out. And my aunt was buying toys for the kids, like she was treating everybody. And I saw that they had the new Hasbros out. And I see Dusty, and I'm like, oh, they have Dusty. And I'm like, you know, roaming through the pegs, because that's what we did as kids. We're looking to see all the new stuff they have. And they had Hacksaw, and Hacksaw came with the 2x4. Yep. And I begged my aunt for both of them, and she goes, well, you can get one, because the girls are only getting one thing each, so you can get one thing. I can't buy you two. And I put Dusty back for Hacksaw. And I did
Hacksaw feel proud.
I mean, you know, it was the accessory sold. You know, I guess I just wanted to bash people to join for that. But I did not get a good Dusty Rhodes Hasbro until years later when I went to work at FTC, because FTC, just, you know, quick side note, FTC kind of blew up in the wrestling industry and getting involved in the wrestling stuff due to the fact that they were selling old backstock from toy companies to the collector's market, and one of the main people they were buying from was Hasbro's, and my boss was getting the Hasbro figures for pennies on the dollar in 95, 96. So by the time I started in 1999, he had green cards, he had foreign cards, he had Series 1, he had almost everyone you could think of. So I got to fill a couple of voids between figures that had crapped out on me or guys that I didn't find back in the day.
Cool. Two of my favorites from Series 2 are the Macho King, and because he came with the crown and a scepter, and the Honky Tonk Man. I always thought the Honky Tonk Man is just a great character. With his outfit that was, you know, and another thing, most of these figures had different bodies. Like, a lot of them didn't carry over. You know, they had to mold each body differently. So that's huge in the toy world. I mean, because most of the time you try to stay with the same body. That way you just have the one mold, and it's much cheaper.
And we're seeing that now with Mattel and the Retros.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, everybody has a spring body, so.
A spring or a slam.
Yeah, yeah. But Honky Tonk Man came with a guitar, which I don't feel that I've ever seen either. But that was really cool. I mean, it was cool that these came with accessories. And, I mean, the one, because most of them, they needed those accessories, you know. I mean, Hulk Hogan doesn't really have an accessory, except for Ed Leslie.
Not anymore. Not if you read some of those recent tweets.
So yes, I have. Yeah, this past weekend, that relationship kind of blew up.
Shades of Halloween Havoc 94.
I know, right? Jonathan, what are you said you like that Ultimate Warrior the best. Did you have any other favorites?
Yeah, well, that Honky Tonk Man one, I never actually had that one, but it's a great figure.
It is.
And the Hacksaw Jim Duggan one, I do have that one, but I don't think I still have the 2x4. And I do have the green Tux Ted DiBiase, which I like a lot better than the black Tux for some reason.
Yeah, I think that one pops more. I would agree to that, because I love DiBiase, and I always like the green type one, the green tuxedo one.
Yeah, it definitely stands out. I always liked it, too. But it has the same face, right? Same head sculpt?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think, it's not the same body.
It's the same face, but I feel like there's more detail to the face, if that makes sense. I think they maybe use, like, a couple of different shades on them.
I got you. Is it the same body as well, Chris? Do you know?
No.
It's not.
No, Series 1 had, like, that kind of, like, roundhouse punch. And Series 2 was, I think it was Million Dollar Stomp was what it was called, where you lift the arm and the leg goes up and then it drops down. So it was, you could either basically be doing a fist drop or a stomp. It was almost like a 2-in-1 action feature.
The stomp was kind of weird, but it was kind of cool all at the same time. The Bushwhackers had that too. But I always thought that one was weird, but in playing with the toys, like, it makes sense. Like, you could stomp the opponent when they were down. So that was the cool thing about all the actions. Like, they kind of were wrestling based, most of them anyway. So in getting off track, instead of going Series 3, 4, and all that, so we mentioned the Honky Tonk Man, and we all like that figure. Well, so there were a lot of prototypes that never got released. And so, Chris, do you want to take it over as far as what I'm talking about? Alongside with Honky Tonk Man?
Yeah, so for those who don't remember, or those who just don't know, the WWF magazine, WWF was very big in hyping these. We had commercials with the wrestlers. They had them on Primetime Wrestling. They were showing them in the display. And WWF magazine would always have a full-page advertisement. And in one of those advertisements was an ad that featured not only Honky Tonk Man, but the Johnny Cash gimmick looking Greg Valentine from the Rhythm and Blues era. So of course all of us were like, there's a Rhythm and Blues two pack. Like, we've got to get to Toys R Us. We've got to get to KB Toy Store. We've got to find this. And it was the holy grail because none of us ever found it. Well, lo and behold, the Rhythm and Blues Greg Valentine was never officially released. Only several were made. And I know that it now resides in the collection of Notorious Collector, not notorious in a bad way, but notorious because he gets all the good stuff because he's got the money to do so, Mr. Zack Ryder himself.
Yeah, he just picked that up over the summer, I think.
It's been fairly recent that he's been getting that, and he's been getting, I mentioned the JCPenney ad. He got the prototype Macho Man from Series 1 that had green tights instead of orange tights.
That's right. That's right. I remember them talking about that. Yeah, so that Greg Valentine, I would love to have that. And because I loved Greg Valentine when I was little, and I even like his figure, even though it's mostly plain. But if I remember correctly, it came with the shin guard.
He did have the shin guard on, yep.
So that was one of my favorite eras of Greg Valentine when he wore the shin guard, and to do the figure four, he would flip the shin guard around and cause more damage.
You know, exactly. That's one of the things I like about that because, you know, it was a little subtly different, you know, because what am I trying to think of? Bob Orton Jr. had the cast, but that was just him pretending that it was still hurt and just using it against a different, so it was kind of a cheating thing in that way. But a hammer, he could hurt you normally with his finisher, but he used the brace just to make it worse.
Yeah.
And it technically was still legal. It wasn't an illegal move. It wasn't really cheating. It was just a nasty, horrible thing to do. But go ahead.
No, yeah, it's cool. I mean, yeah, I always loved it. So let's go back to Series 3 since we took that little tour. Jonathan, have you ever seen a picture of that Rhythm and Blues Greg Valentine?
I'm not that I remember. I mean, I'm sure I had issues of WWE magazine or WWF magazine, but it's not ringing any bells at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason I've seen is because I've been keeping up with the Zack Ryder and watching his collection grow every month. It seems he gets a cool figure.
Well, and I hope we get a Zack Ryder retro figure at some point.
Oh, he hopes that too, I think.
Yeah, I know that he and Kurt Hawkins are both pulling for those because Hawkins is a pretty big collector in his own right.
Yeah.
You mean over them as edgeheads or
that'd be great.
Oh yeah.
I'd be all for that. I was a fan of that.
Or the what were they? The Majors brothers?
The Major brothers. Yeah, they were the Majors and they were the Major.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know if I put two. I don't know if I remember them being that. I remember the name, but I don't remember it being them.
I mainly remember it because they were in Deep South Wrestling, which was here in Georgia, and I saw them there. And then I think that was they were the Majors brothers there, and then the Major brothers.
Yeah, that was the Majors. Yep.
And then, as the story goes, Vince McMahon didn't realize they weren't actually brothers, and then he found out, and he was like. Why do we have them as a tag team if they're not brothers? I don't know how true that is, but
that's true. Yeah, Hawkins has confirmed that one.
Because that's what matters. You have to be brothers if you're in a tag team.
Well, it kind of was a joke because there for a while that, you know, it seemed like the best way Vince and WWE thought it had to be. Because it was like, I mean, they would make brothers out of people who weren't brothers. A lot of people need to remember that Edge and Christian were brothers at start.
That's true.
Undertaker and Kane.
Undertaker and Kane, yes.
Jimmy and Jey Uso. No, I'm just kidding.
The Hardys.
Stevie Ray.
Although in listening to the Bruce Pritchard podcast, I never knew this because I don't know Samoan, but Uso means brother, so that's why their last name is Uso.
Us. That's why they always call each other Us and call them, so Us, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, that fun fact out of the way. Let's,
when I say Us, you say?
I'm not doing it.
Damn it.
Oh, so they don't even do that anymore.
Yeah, not anymore. They don't do that at heels. So John, I know you don't have the I guess you don't have this figure because you said you only had Rowdy Piper. But in Series 3, one of the Von Erichs actually got a Hasbro.
Yes, and I wish I had that Von Erich. I really
I have that one right in front of me, actually.
Texas Tornado.
Guess what, Jonathan? I hate it.
Now there's no hate on the show.
I intensely dislike him. I'm envious of him.
So this one didn't have a tag team. This series did not have a tag team set, I don't believe. But it does have Earthquake and Typhoon, which
yep.
I think is funny that you just didn't put that in a two-pack. But I love the Earthquake figure and the Typhoon. I think they're great.
A Tugboat figure in this style would have been great. I guess they never did that, though, did they?
No, the only Tugboat is in Mattel Elite now. They have the Mattel Elite one.
Yeah, it's weird that they didn't do a Tugboat. I mean, I guess by the time the series came around, Tugboat was gone, and it was Typhoon, so the Hasbro figures weren't really known to go backwards, I don't feel, you know? I mean, if they were, they just kind of, whatever was hot at the time, they would put out. Christy, what are some of your favorites in this line?
I really like the Jimmy Snuka, and that's one of the times where I think that the spring-loaded jump feature worked because you could do the Superfly Splash, and I liked how it had his hand doing the little the traditional Snuka gesture. Earthquake and Typhoon were awesome figures. Series 3 was when we got the second Boss Man, correct, with the clothesline. Yeah, and I thought that was I thought the first one was great. I thought that was a big improvement on Boss Man. I love the big Boss Man. I think the second one blew the first one away.
Yeah, I liked it as well. It did not have the sunglasses on, I think, right?
No, yeah, it was regular facial features.
Yeah. Yeah, that one was cool. I probably like that one more, too. Coco Beware, which was one of my favorites. He had the Birdman Bounce, which I think is just a funny name.
And just the color scheme on that figure was great. Like, the yellow and the blue, just that really popped. That was a great figure.
Yeah, I love the colorful figures. Even the Jim and the Anvil Neihardt that we talked about, even though it wasn't pink and black, I love the color scheme on that, just like the Owen. The color scheme was really nice. Bright colors seem to do these wonders, I feel, because the Earthquake, I love the Earthquake. The Earthquake had the Andre body as well. I'm guessing Typhoon probably did too.
No, they actually had like a chubby body. It's kind of like the body that they used for Bam Bam Bigelow.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to ask. You beat me to it. I was going to ask, is it before Coco got fat? I guess not.
Because Andre had the body where it was kind of like he was in two parts and he could move like that. But Earthquake and Typhoon, their move was like they could do their little sit-down splashes. They were molded for that, but their arms would also shoot up and down.
That's right. That's right. I do remember that now. In Coco, you had Frankie the Parrot. That was the, I think that was the only accessory other than Boss Man. They put him with the nightstick once again, but I think you actually see the accessories from this series on go down. I don't think many people came with accessories after that.
Oh, wait.
What?
Never mind. I'll do research and I'll get back to you.
Okay.
Was there's another Brutus Beefcake, wasn't there?
There is. That's actually in, let's see. I'm not sure what series that's in, but I'm not sure that he came with the Shears again.
I don't think this one did.
I don't think he did. I actually like the figure better. I didn't like the first Brutus. But the other Brutus, I actually liked a lot more because he had the white tights and white and black tights. And it just felt more like Brutus to me.
You mean like Zodiac?
A little bit.
Yes, no, yes.
He didn't have the face paint, but I guess you probably could just put that on there.
Well, the first Brutus, too, I know that he was... So it said that he could do the sleeper hold, but he had the jump feature, but his arm was curved in the way that you, you know, wrap around the chin and the neck, and his other hand had was doing the clipper sign. So it's like he was doing like the peace sign or throwing up deuces, as the kids would say. So it looks like the first Brutus just has like this like douchey frat boy pose where like you could just put your arm around another figure and throw up the peace sign and take a selfie. Like you really couldn't like you could throw a good drop kick with it or maybe hit an elbow smash, but if you're trying to like throw a punch, you're essentially doing a Three Stooges eye poke with the just looking at a 10-year player perspective. So
Punch McGraw used to do that as a move.
That's true. But yeah, this was definitely an improvement. I'll agree with you 100% there.
I think the tag teams in Series 4 were probably the two best-looking tag team figures, I feel. It was Legion of Doom and Nasty Boys.
And I think those Nasty Boys, two of the best.
Yeah, and they're pretty rare. They used to be a lot harder to find, but the Legion of Doom, I feel like it could have been a perfect accessory to have the shoulder pads be an accessory, but they didn't do that. They were molded on, and the Nasty Boys were the Nasty Boys. They didn't.
We're gonna take you for a trip to Pity City.
The Nasty Boys didn't have their trench coats, but they had. I mean, they looked like the Nasty Boys.
Yeah, they had the graffiti shirts on.
The false alarm was that. I have a Terry Funk figure, but it's actually from the Mattel later on.
Oh yeah,
But it's from his look in the 80s WWE. So with the branding iron.
He was never in. He wasn't in WWF when they were doing the Hasbros.
That's right, because they didn't do those until the 90s.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, right. 1990 was when it started.
Right.
So
a lot of
the wrestlers that we would have liked to seen as Hasbros got missed just because of that.
Right.
I feel starting with Series 5, we start to get different figures. Like, you know, you always had Hogan figures, and you always had... even Shawn Michaels had a few figures before the Hasbros and stuff, but now we're getting into figures that are WWE kind of creations with Skinner, the Mountie. You even had Virgil. I mean, Virgil got a figure in 93. That's kind of amazing. But it was when he left Million Dollar Man, and we never got Virgil in a suit. He was kind of a big deal there, though,
because he was the million-dollar champion, wasn't he?
I feel that he got that at one time. And you also had Erwin R. Scheister, who I loved as a kid, but I feel like he should have came with a briefcase, and this is why I say the accessories kind of drop off a little bit, because we didn't get Erwin R. Scheister with a briefcase.
Yeah, well, even going back to the Series 4, the Ricky Steamboat figure, I think is really cool, but I think it would have been better if you could take his...
headset off.
Yeah, you could take the cape off, but not the headband, or the headpiece.
And he had the springy body, but that completely makes sense, so...
Yeah.
You know, the springy body does make sense for some people.
Yeah, it made sense with him, with Jimmy Snuka, I don't remember who else. The Warrior one was kind of weird.
I mean, I get, in Chris's with Chris's analysis, I think it does sort of make sense as far as he did that that block, that like gorilla thing. So that sort of, I mean, I guess you can kind of see it that way. But yeah, not usually known for a high flyer.
No, I shudder to think what that would look like, and I love the man.
Yeah. And Rick Martel, I love the model gimmick, and I wish he came with Arrogance, but
yeah, that would have been perfect.
That would have been good. I think Mountie did come with a stick, didn't he?
He did. Yep.
So they did do a accessory in that. Sid Justice, I always thought that was a cool figure. And Skinner, I mean, I hated the character. I mean, I never thought it was a good wrestling character or anything, but the figure is actually pretty cool.
That's, the Skinner is one of the most detailed ones. The Skinner actually, it's funny because you look at a lot of these toy lines and the guys that you would think they'd pay more attention to sometimes come off so simple. And then you've got a guy who is a jobber to the stars like Skinner, and it's and a fantastic figure. It's, and you know, that's really cool to me because it shows that you don't have to, you know, you don't have to get a line that's just playing the hits and doing your Hogan's and Warriors and Macho Man's and stuff like that. You've got some really detailed, really fun looking figures for guys that didn't have a big following.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think Skinner is a perfect example of that. I mean,
he's another one of those that in that particular weird place where they introduced big time, like Outback Jack, Skinner, some of these guys they put a lot of introduction time into, and then they, all they came in to be was just jobbers.
Yeah.
That was just very bizarre.
Well, but it kind of follows.
We won't even get into the how much of a turnaround the character Skinner was from Kern's day. This is one of the fabulous ones, but let's say that.
Speaking of jobbers, Papa Shango is in Series 6.
Ah.
As much as I love Papa Shango, but, you know, I mean, as they never really did much with him. But I love the character, and I love the figure, too. Did you guys have any particular favorites in Series 6?
The Shango was great. You know, the man's claim to fame was running in late at the main event of WrestleMania 8. But
he made Ultimate Warrior throw up like a green something.
Yeah, he made him throw up. He made him, you know, ooze from the head. Actually, that's a Target exclusive 2-pack right now. Is Papa Shango versus the Ultimate Warrior?
It is.
Yeah, and they're great figures that are just. I got them a long time ago, and they're still there every time I go to Target.
Yeah, they're the new Tito Santana. My local Target has about 10 Tito Santanas there.
Yeah, I got the Tito Santana one too. It's a cool figure.
Yeah, so our Target had Tito, like 10 of them, but I noticed the other day they're gone, so they must have just gave up on them and shipped them to some
Hello,
discount store.
Big Lots.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're at Ollie's or Big Lots or
Bargain
something.
Bargain Hunt.
Marshalls and TJ Maxx are getting figures, too. They're getting Elite Series for like $7.99.
I have seen that on Twitter, people getting TJ Maxx figures. So, yeah, $7, yep. You can't beat that. Bargain Hunt, I don't know how wide of a chain that is, but they get figures in quite a bit for $7-$8. I bought the
TJ Maxx is getting, like, the most recent Elite sets, too, like with Berserker.
Wow.
Yeah, like the ones that you can still find for $20 at your local Target or Walmart are popping up at TJ Maxx and Marshalls. I found a few for my son for Christmas that I'm stowing away for him.
Man. That Berserker one's really good. So is the Warlord.
Yep, yeah, Warlord's a great figure.
Berserker, I mean, it has crazy detail.
And he comes with a sword and everything. Like, yeah, that's a great figure.
Yeah.
Warlord has the staff, the W staff.
Yes, that is cool. Repo Man is one that I love. I love Repo Man. I mean, I don't know how long he lasted, and he was sort of popular. I feel, but yeah, the figure I think is fun, and Tatanka is another good one.
So the Repo Man, which member of Demolition was he?
Barry Darson?
Smash.
Barry.
So he got three figures?
Yeah, well, the Smash and the 2-pack was just a re-release of the previous Smash.
Oh, okay.
Now, I don't know whether he ever got any WCW ones or any retro ones.
Is that the only person who had two different figures in this series? I'm thinking so.
It might be.
Well, there were two different crushes, but still crush.
Yep, there were supposed to be two different Valentines.
Oh, well, but they were still Valentine, though. We're talking about a completely different thing.
Yeah, that is interesting. I think that's right. Yeah, I can't think of any other figure that would have done that.
Yeah, I'll tell you, you have certain actors that have got a reputation for being that sort of chameleon. I mean, who more than Barry Darso went through so many different incarnations that which they got over.
Yeah.
Now there's been lots of things that have had a lot of them, like Ed Leslie. but
I think
also,
Luke Gallows has had more gimmicks than anybody.
Oh
yes, yeah. Well, yeah, but Darso actually had at least three, maybe four, that got over, you know, because he was one of the Russians even before Nikita got there, and the Russians were a huge team in NWA.
Yep.
And yeah, then, and of course, he was a part of Demolition, which was way over, and he did okay with the Repo Man. It wasn't that bad. And then Bike Top Bully actually got over until they fired him because he was too bloody.
But then don't forget, he went back as himself. And actually, speaking of Berserker, he had like a WCW Saturday Night team with John Nord for a while. And then they did that thing where he kind of went nuts and he thought he was a golf pro and he was Mr.
Darso.
And he beat down Kaz with his putting green one night.
Oh my God, that's right.
But that was one cool thing about WCW Saturday Night, especially towards the end. It's like they kind of stuck all the jobbers and the guys they had no like strong use for on that show, but you always got like these random pairings and these random matchups, and it's like if John Nord and Barry Darso were a tag team in 1989, 1990, like without Demolition around, like they probably would have been the number two or three top heel team in a company.
Yeah, definitely.
One of the things that disappointed me about Series 7 is Owen Hart. I wish we would have got a King of Hearts, but I guess that was much later, too. Instead we got the Rocket, I guess he was being called.
Blue Blazer.
High Energy.
Yeah. Oh, High Energy, right.
Yeah.
Oh.
and I love the fact that Nails has a figure, and I guess that goes to show, like, just that, you know, some weird characters got figures that just were never over. I mean, Nails wasn't around that long.
He actually wasn't even around by the time that figure came out.
Got released. That's crazy.
Yeah, he was gone, because he left and he did that little stop over in WCW where he fought Sting at Slamboree. And then he just kind of vanished again.
That was probably one of the more clear reasons why he got fired, though.
Yeah.
When you actually pick a fight with the boss.
Yeah. Yeah. Kamala.
And I think he refuses to do any type of convention or anything. I think he, like, runs a car lot or a car dealership or something. And I've heard that he just, like, flat out refuses to do any type of public appearances as Nails or at a convention or anything.
So he's still a miserable human being, then.
Yeah, pretty much. I guess it takes all types.
You were about to mention Kamala, the Ugandan warrior. See, that's one I would love to have. I would love to have your Kamala.
And so Chris, maybe you have more information too. It has a star on his belly, but isn't there a variant
with a moon?
Yeah, there's a variant with the moon on the belly, which is another
more accurate.
The rare gets. excuse me, and another rare piece that
it's crazy valuable, right?
Yeah, like, I haven't checked the price recently, but I know that it went upwards for like $8,000 to $10,000.
Yeah,
the last time I heard.
Wow. Yeah, that's
so,
what
yeah,
I think.
It shot up. It's amazing to think that with so much stuff mass produced, especially these days, like we just went on that little segue about all these figures showing up at, you know, Big Lots and TJ Maxx's and stuff, because there's obvious oversaturation, to think that there were figures back then that gained that much value just because of a simple detail.
Yeah, one that doesn't matter to the actual figure. I mean, whether it has a moon or a star doesn't play in part. It's not like he had a different face paint or, you know,
he always did have the moon, though. And he always had the star both, so I guess you're one or the other. If he didn't have both, he should have had both. But,
right.
But anyway, I got a story about that real quick. I don't know if you overheard this or not. But, you know, Jerry Lawler is the one that created the character of Kamala in Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, James Harris had been Sugar Bear Harris and whatever. And he just happened to be visiting there because some buddies of his were wrestling from Memphis at the time. And he was hanging around out back. And Jerry looked at him and said, "Oh, Lord, that old boy, I could do something with him." So the whole thing come to him, and as we know, Jerry definitely loves the whole horror thing and movie things and so forth. So he saw him immediately as this, you know, cannibal from Africa, whatever. And so he did all the painting on him and this, that, and the other. And so he's sitting there painting the stuff on, you know, on Kamala, and he paints the moon. And so James Harris looks down and says, "Jerry," he says, "What? Why'd you paint a banana on my belly?" So anyway, fun little story. That's from funny. James Harris himself.
So this, I think this is the one you were talking about, Chris, the Shawn Michaels in Series 7. Was that your favorite? Because it's definitely mine.
With the white and red, yep. And then they re-released it with the black and silver.
Yeah, it is such a great figure. I mean, he's got the sunglasses on, and they match his outfit on both of those. But just the pose is great. I just love this figure. I was about to say Scott Hall, but the Razor Ramon figure is equally cool in this line as well.
Yeah, Razor was a great figure. Came with a gold chain, so another one that came with the accessories later in the line.
Which
could have, oddly enough, been
molded on, but it's funny how they choose to do things sometimes, because they could have just been molded on instead of a separate accessory, but it's nice that it was an accessory.
And did you see that they revealed that they're doing the Razor Ramon Funko Pop, and they're doing a Scott Hall NWO one?
But
they're using the same mold, so he's got the chain on, and Scott Hall actually tweeted back to Funko saying, "Nice try, I didn't wear my chains in the NWO days."
Well, and it's funny because they're both called Razor Ramon. The other one's not Scott Hall. So that Funko, I mean, usually is pretty accurate about that stuff, but... Man, they really did just drop the ball on that one. Just all the way around.
For all their hits, I guess they were entitled to a miss every now and again.
I know, right? Which, on a side note, Funko went live today on the stock market.
And I heard it did not do as well as projected.
It did not. It did not close well. So it opened well, but by the end of the... I have no idea how stocks work, but from what I read in the article, it opened well, but by the time it closed today, it did not finish well.
If I read right, they were projecting something between like 12 to 15 a share, and the last bit of trading that I saw, it was trading at like an average of $8 a share.
Yeah, that's what I had heard too. So, all right, so they started going by colors. Series 7 was the first one that they started kind of going by the color. They were known as like the yellow card series, and then we had the red cards, and I think the red cards are pretty awesome. What do y'all, Jonathan? What are some of your favorites out of this red car series? Because I think they're all really, really good.
Red's a very good color.
I think I had gotten out of it by this point. So I don't remember a lot of these red card series 8 ones.
Yeah, I mean, when these came out, I was deep in high school, so I mean, to be honest, I just didn't care. Like, I was more in the video games than I was action figures.
Well, I don't remember a time where I stopped collecting action figures, even in high school when other people kind of were doing other stuff. I still collected action figures, but I just don't remember these very well.
You want to come over here and play gin, Jonathan?
Play what?
Gin.
John is making fun that he doesn't know any of these either. So,
so just come on over here, play some cards.
Well, I'll bring my Texas Tornado figure with me.
Forget it.
Invitation
rescinded.
I do wish we would have got a Lex Express out of all this, though. We did get a Lex Luger figure, but it was only a Narcissist Lex Luger.
And I think the USA one was another rumor for the series that was never made.
Oh, that last series?
Yeah, the orange card series.
Long enough.
Yeah, but it was so popular. I mean, not really. I mean, but they pushed it so much.
It was popular to a degree.
And
I think it would. I think it could have worked if things had worked. You know, if they'd done it more correctly. But it basically the bottom fell out before they could do anything with it. So probably a lot of merchandise was probably in the works, but it was too late. too little, too late.
Because in this series,
the US Alex happened for over, it was over 2 years that he was US Alex, because he turned face July of 93, and he was US Alex until he showed up on Nitro, which was 95, because he did the Allied Powers thing.
So I wonder, you would think so then. I don't know what the problem is. Maybe the writing was on the wall all along.
Because Yoko was in this series.
If the Orange Card series was booked for like late 94, it made sense that he was planned for that, because you figure, like, you know, last half of 93, they were probably like projecting what to do. And, you know, he was a major player at that point. He was still feuding with big names. He wasn't pushed down the card just yet. So, it was him, Diesel, it was Men on a Mission. So it was guys that were getting some semblance of a push that were set for the Orange Card series. I think it was just a matter of time, because if you look at it, the way they book things out, and I can even say this speaking from experience from my standpoint of how long it takes to get guys out, you know, Nails came out, and by the time Nails came out, he was gone. So they probably had an idea to do Lex maybe towards the end of 93, beginning of 94, and then, you know, the line just, you know, the bottom crapped out on the line in mid-94, and then that was it. We didn't see any more again.
Yeah,
it's interesting to me that there were never any female figures in this line, were there?
Nope.
No.
No, I would have loved an Alundra Blaze. That would have been perfect.
Or a Luna Vachon.
Luna would have been amazing.
Well, Luna would have been great. You know, I didn't even think about Luna when I was talking about female figures with some other people. I mentioned Alundra Blaze, but yeah, Luna probably would have even been better, because Hasbro did the gimmicks so well.
Yeah.
So a figure like Luna, I think they really would have nailed her, because she's perfect for that cartoon.
She's so crazy.
Sherry would have been a good one.
Queen Sherry would have been great, because you had King Macho. So
Queen or Scary Sherry, either one.
Yeah. Yeah, so, the Red Card series I think is great. Bam Bam is awesome. And he, I always noticed that he's hard to find nowadays with all his paint. Like, for some reason, the paint came off of him the easiest, and the flames on his head obviously did, too.
He was a great figure, though. I love Bam Bam Bigelow, and I think that was a great figure of him.
He was.
Bam Bam's great.
So, Doink the Clown is one of my favorite wrestlers in general. Like, I just love the story behind Doink the Clown, and love the character as well. I love
Clown. You have a very interesting list of favorite wrestlers. You know that?
Well, but you have to think about the time, too. I mean, come on.
No, trust me, I love Matt's version of Doink.
He's great.
It's just that your list of top favorites is not typical of what a lot of people.
Well, you know. But the Doink figure is awesome, and it was in the Purple Card series, because he had real hair, which I think he's the only one, right?
Yeah, he was the only one that had rooted hair.
Yeah, which is, I mean, crazy. It looks great. It's a great figure. Very colorful, like a clown should be. And this one also did not have tag teams, but we got a Rick and Scott Steiner. Not Big Papa Pump. This is a much different Scott Steiner, if you remember him in this era. But that was cool. Got the Steiner brothers, and got re-releases of Tatanka, Ted DiBiase, and Hacksaw in this series, too.
And it was Ted DiBiase in his tights, as opposed to a tuxedo.
Oh, that's right. That's right. So it was that one's a big enough difference to make him, like, you could have Ted DiBiase walk into the ring, or manager Ted DiBiase, and then you could have wrestler Ted DiBiase.
And we had Hacksaw on the singlet that he started wearing in the mid-90s.
Everybody's got a price.
And Hacksaw came with a flag, too, in that series, I think. I don't think he did. He came with a board in the first one, but I think he actually came with a flag in the second one.
Could it be said that Hacksaw Dugan had the original Hoe Train?
It could be. It could be, John.
He had a lot of people going hoe with him.
Different kind of hoe.
Oh.
So Giant Gonzalez actually got a figure, and it's equally great. It's equally great and terrible at the same time.
Well, that's pretty much exactly the way the wrestler was. So why not? Figure, a very accurate figure, I would think.
That's funny. Yeah, and this one we got. This one didn't
have. Was he really tall?
So all the figures are the same height, I think, right, guys?
How in the world? No, that drives me crazy with action figures. That's the one thing about action figures that drives me crazy. And I understand economical and all
that. Well, now that's not so much the case. Now they do the different heights and stuff. But I don't think I think these were all the same heights.
Right.
Okay.
Nobody's going to back up on that.
I guess not. Maybe we don't know, but maybe there was a little bit of a difference, but it wasn't enough to be, like, crazy, crazy different.
Right, gotcha.
Not actually how tall Giant Gonzalez was. So, in this series is not that spectacular. That's, in fact, one of the only, like, I guess different figures. We got Samu and Fatu as head shrinkers, and they're obviously different, but they weren't as flashy as Giant Gonzalez, I guess. So anybody got anything to say about the Series 10? It was the dark blue cards.
The Marty Jannetty from that set was a great figure. That was actually one of my favorite figures. And for a time, Rick Steiner was one of the hardest ones for me to find. I had Scott Steiner, but I didn't get the Steiner brothers together because they were sold separately. So as a geeky kid that still toyed around with his toys, my Hasbro Tag Champs for a brief period of time were that Marty Jannetty and the Scott Steiner figure as my makeshift duo. Just a geeky little side note there. But as a Rockers fan, you know, we mentioned the Rockers figures earlier, and I think that Marty Jannetty blew away the Rockers Marty Jannetty, and yeah. I really love the design of those tights. Again, it goes back to the color scheme and the way that those, like, it's almost like a very 90s, like, very trapped in that time way of the way the design was, which makes sense because it was the 90s, but it was an era of vibrant colors, and I think they did a really good job capturing that in a lot of those guys.
It's true. It was, neon colors.
Well, it goes back to our love of Saved by the Bell, Chris. You know, got to have, like, neon and red and blues and yellows.
That's right. They should do, like, a new opening theme and have Marty Jannetty's tights floating around.
Yeah, instead of sunglasses.
By the way, have y'all noticed how colors come back to wrestling? That, you know, there through the Attitude Era and going into the Ruthless Aggression, there was a lot of black, lots of black. But now
a lot of black and red, yeah, silver. Yeah,
lots of black and red, maybe silver. But now more and more wrestlers are getting more colorful gear, particularly the women. But because hell, I mean, you could take Sasha Banks and put her as a 70 in the 90s, and she wouldn't look out of place. But
well, that's the same with the New Day. I think they've got every shade of neon in their closet. Yeah. Right? Everything from neon orange, green, to pink.
Yes. Yes.
Bailey anyway, would have fit in perfect with the 90s as well, early. I feel. Like the early 90s.
She would have been the biggest heel in the 90s.
You know, it's funny because, you know, you say that it's the 80s or 90s, but I've always thought, and I would love to talk to Charlotte about this, but it seems to me that she or somebody with her or together, they're designing her costumes to look new retro to classic wrestling women's outfits. Because they're new and they fit and they're very flattering to her and so forth, but they hers look like the stuff that Mulan and them were wearing back in the 50s and 60s.
I mean, it might be by design, you know. I mean,
I'm sure it is. I believe it is, and I just like to get that confirmation and find out, you know, because I love it. So, you know, go ahead.
So I guess really before we break down some special stuff or whatever at the end, the green card series rounds out. It's the last series of the Hasbros. It was released in 94. So this series ran for 4 years, which is a pretty long time for a series, I feel. Like, it was successful. And but the green cards, what do you guys feel about the green cards? Like, do you have any favorites out of there?
I think that they went out with a bang. Smoking Gun's a great figures, Atom Bomb. 123 Kid got stuck with the Rick Rude, Ric Flair body type. Yeah. But for some reason with him, because he had that skinnier body, it's really the only body that kind of matched him. So mm-hmm. I kind of understand why they did it, because a springy body or a body like even like the Beefcake, the second Beefcake body, probably wouldn't have done him justice. So
no,
I do understand why they would have used that.
Yeah.
But I think that whole line overall, because you only had the one repaint in the Yokozuna, and the Yokozuna was a great figure. I think that they really nailed it, and that was just a great series, a great way to end it, a sad end to a great series. And the Hasbro Green Card series is what led me to my job at Figures Incorporated, so I will always have a soft spot for that Green Card series, because if my buddy didn't order that Yokozuna through my boss, I probably would have never met him or talked to him the way I did and wound up where I am today.
Yeah, you told us that story the first time you were on, I believe. That is pretty awesome, just how things happen like that. Jonathan, do you have any particular favorites out of the Green Cards? The Atom Bomb, I think, is probably the one that pops the most. I mean, that character and that wrestler is just so cool looking. I just think that's a great figure.
Yeah, I agree with that one, and somehow I do remember this series. So I guess I missed a couple series. Maybe I got into something else during that time, but I thought the Ludwig Borga one was good, and the Crush one is good, too.
Yeah, Crush was, I think he was the evil Crush by this point. So
yeah,
the earlier versions were him with Demolition, then him as the Hawaiian guy, and then this one was the one where he was more evil.
I don't remember Billy and Bart Gunn at all.
Yeah, they were cool. Did they have their hats on molded on, Chris?
They were molded on, yes.
Yeah. Too bad we could have got a Sunny with that.
That's what I was about to say. Just missed out on a Sunny. Oh, yep. Damn.
Yeah.
Now we got my attention.
So the 123 Kid figure was notoriously, at least around here in Tennessee, that was the hardest one to get. These were all tough to get, but 123 Kid, for some reason, just we never got. And so the guy that I bought customs from, he did a 6 figure, and he was really good at these, but he didn't want to waste a 123 Kid head, because they were so hard to come by. So he actually molded a head out of hot glue. He, made a mold of the other one, and I guess, epoxy probably wasn't as easy to get or whatever, or it wasn't in his wheelhouse of things to do, so he hot glued his head. But it was still great. I mean, it looked awesome. So there we go. I mean, that's pretty much the entire series. So there was an Orange Card series, like Chris had hinted to. And do you know the lineup of that series, Chris? I know a few, but I don't know all of them.
It was Diesel.
Did y'all consider maybe that they just ran out of colors?
No, they had the Orange Card, but they just didn't do them.
Okay. The Brown Card series with all the crappiest gimmicks.
That's great. I would buy every damn one of them.
You like the gobbledygooker?
Gosh, that's great.
the Orange Card series, and this is just everything that's been pulled through the years. And I actually remember my boss when I first started at Figures Toy Company. He had an old slip from Hasbro, and it was rumored inventory or something. It was some type of thing that he had that he held on to. But it was Diesel, Owen Hart as the King of Hearts, Black Heart, whatever you want to call him, Jeff Jarrett, Mo, Mabel, and a USA Lex Luger. I believe that was the whole series. There might be one or two others that were rumored either for a future series or if they were going to make it a bigger series than just the 6. Because if you remember, we started with 12 and we kind of went down.
Every series
sets went on.
They did have, in series 10, they had a lot of figures, but most of them were repaints. So, there were only 4 new figures, I think. Really only 3. Everything else was just repaints. I have to imagine the Men on a Mission figures would have been spectacular, just with all the color, you know, the purple and the hair and everything. Those would have looked really cool.
Yeah, I'm guessing they probably would have had the Natural Disasters bodies. That's my guess for those two.
Yeah, yes. Was Greg the Hammer in that one, too? Was that the Rhythm and Blues, or was that just a rumor? I mean, was that one supposed to be in the Arn series? Or was that one?
No, because Arn series, you're talking late 94 to early 95 era. So that the Valentine, that advertisement was in a 1991 magazine.
Oh, wow.
Because Rhythm and Blues was 1990. He was back to being blonde Greg Valentine by the spring of 91.
So I wonder what the story is. Is the gimmick just pass and they just scrapped the figure?
That could be it. I don't know too much as far as the reasoning why it got canceled. I always read more of the whole mystery and the hype surrounding the chase for it.
Yeah.
But I mean, I remember, so WrestleMania 6 was when the Bushwhackers were dressed up as like merchandise people and they beat them up. So I mean, that's spring of 1990. And then I remember the following spring, there was a battle royal on Saturday night's main event that came down to Mr. Perfect and Greg Valentine. And Valentine was back to being blonde. He was actually a baby face at that time. So you've got to figure maybe if I can't remember the timeline of the Rhythm and Blues breakup, which back in the day, I could tell you everything that happened in any given wrestling scene. And I guess just the overwhelming amount of wrestling through the years has just, you know, weaned my memory away on stuff.
It didn't last very long.
But, yeah. So whenever he turned face, maybe they were just like, hey, you know what? We'll just do the baby face Greg Valentine. And that's why we got that one. But it's funny because he was a baby face and the one we got did the whole shin guard thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that is interesting. So the Jeff Jarrett, was it planned to have the weird outfit that he had on with the whatever you call that shirt thing he wore?
If I can recall the sketch that I seen that circulated online, and I probably should have looked that up before we did the call, so I apologize. I believe he was going to have the cowboy hat and the sunglasses, and he would have had the, not like striped outfit, but you know how he had kind of like the, you know, cut, open.
Yes. Yeah, it's the strangest outfit you'll ever see on a wrestler, yeah. I feel. Like, it's just weird.
Like, he's got, like, a birdcage top.
Yeah, yeah, it really is.
That was the Jeff Jarrett from the future.
Apparently.
Well, his future wasn't looking too bright, so no wonder he came back.
No. Yeah. So yeah, that would have been a really cool figure, and I've seen, like, drawings. I don't think they ever made a prototype, but I've seen drawings of a Bastion Booger was supposed to be in the future, too, as well.
Oh, he would have been on the brown card.
It's true. That was bad. So yeah, the orange card would have been very cool, and you know it would be cool. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it could ever work, but it would be cool if they re-release these with Mattel, so we can just go ahead and jump into Mattel that they're doing the. You know, they're doing the retro figures, which are, that's what everybody's calling them. They don't really have a name on the package other than WWE figures. Like, it's kind of weird the way they're packaged. But they look just like the Hasbro figures, except they're made by Mattel. And, you know, it'd be cool if they took that orange card series and actually made those so people could complete their collection.
We'll see if they decide to backtrack. I think they're, like, so focused on some of the new stars, or at least the guys that are still there, because, you know, you still got, like, a Sting or the retro Triple H, and the third set is going to be, like, Dean Ambrose and Goldberg, and it's going to be, like, the modern Goldberg. So maybe when they run out of new guys to do, but if they're going to do six per series, if they just did, like, a 4-2 split or a 3-3 split, I think they'd really appeal to both the new and old collectors.
Yeah. Yeah, and that is what they're doing now. They're basically only doing people that exist in WWE now. The first series, you had Brock Lesnar, Kevin Owens, Roman Reigns. What was the other one before?
John Cena.
John Cena.
John Cena.
And then you had Undertaker and Ultimate Warrior. Those weren't released. We were talking off air, I think, where those weren't released right away, and so everybody was chasing them down, and you just got flooded with all the other ones. And then once the Ultimate Warrior and Undertaker got released, Chris, you said that they started packing short on Kevin Owens and Roman Reigns, who I never really saw Kevin Owens. I only saw one, and that's the one I bought. But Roman Reigns, I just said, well, I'll pick him up later, and now I can't find him, so...
I'm sure that Vince has a million more in production.
I'm sure. Or in his office, either one.
Everyone that goes to WrestleMania this year is getting a complimentary Roman Reigns retro. Just watch.
So, what are y'all's favorites in this set?
Well, I only have the first series, as we were talking about before we started recording. I haven't really seen the second series yet. But the Brock Lesnar one is great. And then, of course, the Ultimate Warrior one I like. But it's very similar to one of the second series, Ultimate Warrior, from Hasbro.
With the Series 1 paint scheme. It's kind of like an amalgamation of the
two.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that, but you're right.
I think the Kevin Owens one is fantastic. I think that that's a great-looking figure. And it's, you know, for a first-time retro figure, because... The Undertaker is very similar looks-wise to his old figure, too. So Warrior and Undertaker, I think they kind of got off easy. And John Cena is a pretty easy guy to do. You know, there's really nothing to him. But I think the Kevin Owens figure, I think that was probably the standout of the set. For Series 2, I've only got The Rock in hand. The rest of them are coming in soon. I'll have them all in hand within the next couple of days. But just looking at the pictures, I really like that Sting. And I know he's got the jump feature, but it's a guy that it matches with because you're doing a Stinger Splash. So it's not like you're getting a guy like, you know, like we were talking before about getting Ultimate Warrior and expecting him to do cruiserweight moves. You're getting a guy that's actually putting this feature to use if you're playing with him. I'm not playing with him as much as I used to, but I'm sure my little two-year-old is going to want to have a match. So, you know, I'm sure he'll appreciate the fact that he can do a legitimate Stinger Splash with it.
Yeah, I think the Kane one looks really good just from the pictures I've seen.
Yes, I want the Kane. I also love Mankind. I mean, Mankind's one of my favorite characters, but not, I don't like the, I don't know what you call Mankind. I like the evil Mankind, the all brown Mankind, not Sacco.
Not the like, corporate Mankind.
Yeah, I guess that's what he turned into. But you know, this one, it does have the white shirt and black tie.
Wait a minute. I've got one like that. What is that? I've got this action figure of him in that with the, and it, but you can't move it.
That's probably a Bendham. That's probably the Bendham.
The Jax Ripped and Ruthless.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
all right.
Yeah, Ripped and Ruthless. Is it small, yeah. John, or is it more like
no,
a statue?
It's more normal like a statue.
Yeah, that's Ripped and Ruthless.
Mm-hmm. But if, you know, yeah, we were talking about the discount stores before, the 96 era Mankind is actually one of the figures that's turning up in like Big Lots and TJ Maxx. So, and that's actually a great looking figure, the Elite 96 era Mankind. I've got that one for myself.
Oh, I picked it up as soon as I saw it. It's great. I love it. And I wish
it
I
actually
had that
comes
whole
with a
set.
Sense of hair for his hand.
Yes, it's crazy, right? Like, it has pieces of hair that you plug into his head. I mean, I imagine that if I ever take that out of the package, that I will lose those pieces of hair pretty quick. I wish I had that whole set, though, because the diorama is a boiler room, which I think is awesome.
Oh, I didn't even realize what the diorama is.
Yeah, I think it's the boiler room. Yeah,
makes sense.
Yeah, that. Because now they've run out of ideas, and they're doing the dioramas. I think the one coming up is Rob. They're doing artwork of Rob Schemberger, which is great, or however you say
yes,
that.
Yes, yep, that's
name,
what you
I
said.
Hey, it didn't come with Jim Cornette's rat?
George the Rat is not available now.
Oh, man.
but no, the retro figures are great, I think, and it's nice that... They mostly go along with the old figures. The paint scheme's a little off as far as the flesh tone, I think. But other than that, they fit pretty good. Wouldn't you guys agree?
Yeah, I think that they go hand in hand with them, and I think that it spurred a lot of people to kind of backtrack. Like, I know that if I didn't have my son, I mean, I'm kind of collecting vicariously through him and still picking some stuff up here and there for me. But I mean, if I had the means and the time to, I'd be hitting up eBay looking for some old Hasbros just to get him some.
Yeah, definitely. I would love to collect the old Hasbros, but I don't have it in me. I don't have the time or the money to hunt them down, and they're the ones I've seen aren't in that great a condition. So what it would take to get good conditioned ones at this point would be very, very hard, I would think.
Yeah, it takes a lot of patience and money. And now with the retros kind of rejuvenating the collector's market, the prices have gone up on quite a few of them.
Yeah, I'd say they have. The next series, I've actually seen a bunch. There's Series 3 that's coming out, and that's Seth, Dean, who else?
Goldberg.
Why? And Goldberg's in the springy body, right?
Yep.
Why? When did Goldberg ever do anything?
I guess this is their way of doing a spear.
But I think he would have been perfect
to do that old suplex body with, because you could pose that as a jackhammer.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't know. I think he looks dumb, like, with the springy body. The springy body doesn't fit everybody, I don't think, and Him and Sting, I get the Sting one, and even the Goldberg one, I guess. I feel like they're a little bit of a stretch, but yeah. I really like the Seth, the look of the Seth figure is cool, and Dean is Dean, so.
So why wouldn't Seth be a springy one?
He is.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Good.
I think they overloaded on the spring bodies. Like, I think most of them have them now.
You should do the Ted DiBiase curb stomp.
Oh, yeah, the curb stomp. I hate that they took that move away from him. Because I love that move.
It was a good move.
Yeah, it was cool. It's something a little different and cool name. I mean, cool name, but based on a... an awful thing, I guess. I don't know. Because I think...
Just a small interruption, because we were talking about Heart Foundation figures before. I'm here on my phone, and I see my alerts as they're coming through. And Amazon has the Heart Foundation debut attire 2-pack, which is the Brett and the Anvil and the blue tights. I don't know if you guys have seen those around.
Yes, I have.
They're currently going for $9.97 with Amazon Prime.
Oh, that's in the Mattel.
So you can actually get two figures for the price of one.
Dang. Yeah, I don't really like the faces on those. The Brett face is not good, I don't feel. But yeah, for a collector, that's a good deal.
They're not the best figures. I actually just got these for my son the other day. Because usually, you know, he's only 2.5, but he's a huge wrestling nut already. Like father, like son. And he is very into the old guys. Like, he's very, like, Macho Man is, like, his new favorite guy. So he actually picked up the Macho King Mattel figure the other day. My dad gave him some money to go to the store. And then we went to another store, and all the solo guys were guys that he had. It was, like, Samoa Joe, Apollo Crews, and he sees the Hart Foundation. He's like, that's Bret Hart right there. And I'm like, yeah. He goes, I don't have Bret Hart. And I'm like, well... We'll get you Bret Hart later, because I don't think that 2-pack is worth $20. No. So, of course, I'm like, we'll get it later. And on Amazon the other day, I track a lot of figures and stuff like that, because I'm collecting with the two of us. And I see that it was marked down to $11, so Target price matched it for us. So I got him the two for $11, and I guess I just forgot to delete it from Amazon once I bought it for him. And I just got the alert that the price had been lowered, so now it's actually even cheaper than $11.
Dang.
And I thought $11 was a steal.
Yeah, I mean, for half price, that is a good deal, especially for kids. I mean, you know, if you're buying for kids, action figures are so expensive now. And that's the nice thing about the retro figures. I mean, I say nice thing because they're cheap, but they're not really cheap. I mean, they're as much as basics, but they really, I think they're better than the basic figures for the most part. Because they have actions and they're more... they're more realistic in a cartoony way. I mean, I say that because it you know exactly who the people are. And so they run $10, which I feel is a little high, but, I mean, I get it. I mean, it's we're actually, in a different market now.
It's not that bad because KB Toy Stores back in 1990, 1991 was charging $6.99 for Hasbro's.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you cheapskate.
Well, yeah, but KB is also $2 or $3 higher than the other places. But
that's true. But actually, it's funny that you say that, and I believe it was like this nationwide, but it was especially prevalent here again because Hasbro was here. I don't know if you guys would remember this. When Hasbro closed out the line, a lot of backstock flooded out mainly to KB Toys. And KB Toys had not only the normal figures, but even some foreign card assortments, and they were charging $3 for $10 in 1994 and 95.
Wow.
So, and they were on the pegs there, at least around here, up until like early 96. You could get red card, you could get, I never saw the green card $3 for $10, but you could get Bam Bam Bigelow, the Steiners, Doink the Clown, Bret Hart, you know, Undertaker, popular guys. It wasn't just like Fatu and Skinner floating around. You could get pretty much anybody $3 for $10. So I actually picked up some duplicates, like guys, because some of the action features wore out over time or sure. Some of the paint got stuffed. So I'd actually replenish my collection with a sale like that. I don't know if you guys ever saw any of the sales that way.
Well, KB, I love the KB toys, but they were vastly overpriced as far as a Walmart or any other store. But they did run deals, and you could find stuff that you couldn't find anywhere else. So I loved KB for that. But yeah, the deals were the best part.
Oh, by far.
I forgot, I was going to mention this at the very beginning of the episode, and I forgot, but we talked about LJNs last time, and about a week after we talked about that, I was looking for LJNs, and I found, on one of those yard sale site things, I found this guy selling a lot of them, 30 LJNs, and they were in really, really good condition, and I got a lot of accessories, too, so... So the LJNs are still around. The guy, it was a story of he had a real estate, or he bought an estate, and they were just going through the basement and found a box of these. And they, I mean, I didn't get any of the rare ones, but I got a ton. I got Terry Funk with all his accessories. I got a lot of them with their accessories. So. That was really cool. So you can, and the guy didn't really know what he had. He knew what he had. I mean, I think I paid less than, I think I paid around $6 a piece for them. Or maybe
that's not
even,
bad.
Maybe even less than that. Success. Yeah, and the paint was still good on most of them. I mean, I've got a Bobby Heenan. I've got Junkyard Dog. Junkyard Dog has the collar. Which I'd never seen the collar before that. So you can find deals sometimes. I don't know about the Hasbros. Like Chris said, they're pretty popular now. Do you guys have anything you want to close out with as far as the Hasbro goes? Any memories or favorite ones or anything? We'll start with you, Chris.
I mean, some of my favorites, I mentioned that through the conversation, just a couple that I didn't mention or that we didn't really touch on. The Mr. Perfect in the blue singlet, just another great figure, just another awesome, awesome figure. We didn't really talk about the mail-aways. Those are some of the rarer ones and the more highly collectible ones. The Hogan in the mail-away bag, Undertaker and Bret Hart, especially valuable if you actually still have them in the bag. If you have them out, then, you know, they still maintain some value. But Hogan was one that, and I'm not the hugest Hogan fan, but he had a figure, it seemed like, in every set to start. He was kind of like the, you know, the John Cena back then, you know, if you were not a Hulk Hogan fan, which, you know, most people that are listening to this either were or at least know who the man is. But I think that the Hogan with the suplex feature was probably my favorite one. I'm not particularly a fan of that Gorilla Press feature. I think that the arms and the mechanism kind of weakens pretty quick on that one.
Yeah.
thinking back, you know, we touched on the Ultimate Warrior, so we talked about that. Just, I mean, it's my favorite toy line. It was my favorite toy line to collect as a kid. You know, I obsessively chased down so many figures. I've got the sentimental attachment between my grandmother starting the collection for me and having it play a part in my getting hired by Figures Inc. And I'm very glad to see Mattel doing the retros, because modern collecting, you know, until my son started getting old enough to start focusing on what he liked and wanting to get stuff, I don't like the Mattel basics personally. I probably only have like a handful for myself. I do like the elites, but I'm very choosy about the ones I get. The retros are the ones that really pulled me back into collecting. And like I said, if I could backtrack and get some extra Hasbros or kind of replenish some of the ones that are worn out or that I sold off now, I'd gladly do it. And someday it might come down to that. But for now, I'm happy chasing these down at Walmart. It's kind of, you know, little fire in my collector belly.
Cool. Yeah, that's nice to hear. Figures have a way of doing that sometimes, especially, I mean, these touch that nostalgia button, you know, very much so, especially if you're still watching the current product, you definitely have more connection. Jonathan, how about you?
I somehow never got the Legion of Doom tag team set, and I hope to someday track it down in decent condition, but otherwise, we didn't mention Sergeant Slaughter, but I don't think it was a great figure, really.
I mean, I think it was a cool figure. I mean, it looked like him. I mean, it had the, you know, it had the molded on hat and sunglasses and camo pants. But I mean, Sarge, I always liked Sergeant Slaughter. I liked the G.I. Joe. I liked every figure they do of him. I even liked the Jax Commissioner, Sergeant Slaughter. But
yeah, these new retro figures, I agree. I'm trying to get all of them, and then sort of it's kind of inspired me to go back and fill in gaps in the Hasbro collection. But at the same time, keeping up with the new ones and going back for the old ones is kind of hard to do at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's easier just to find the new ones for now.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people, you know, they stopped this in the mid-90s, and I think part of what they're doing with the new series is filling in the blanks of characters that maybe would have been in the next series or two, as well as doing current people, of course. But there's still a lot of people that they could do from the mid to late 90s and early 2000s. That we'll hopefully see.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I guess
So did the Jax Commissioner figure come with spitting action?
It didn't. It should have came with a face shield.
Well, no, because it was them that used the face shield.
It was them that used the face shield. No, he just came with a piece of paper.
Oh, okay.
I guess for me, I really love that King Macho. I just think it's great with the crown and scepter, and I love the fact that they're not molded on. So I think that does a lot. The Earthquake, I love the character of Earthquake. He should have come with a little snake in a bag. I know the Elite does now for his famous snake squashing scene, but. You know, Earthquake has that problem of a tan tongue, and we don't get a red tongue, so that kind of puts a bummer on that one. But I also like the Sid Justice. I think that's a great figure. For as plain as it is, I mean, it's not, doesn't have much, but it looks just like him.
We're alive, pal.
I mean, it could have came with a softball and a softball bat, but, you know,
for pair of scissors.
Yeah, a pair of scissors.
Actually, just get Brutus' shears from Series 1. And just,
yeah.
There
yeah.
you go.
That's right. Doink would have been cool if he came with a pail.
That would have worked. Because even, like, in that video game they put out, like, he had the pail as a weapon.
Oh, gosh, I love that video game, the WrestleMania, the arcade game.
And on the Raw, the Super Nintendo Raw.
Oh, that's right.
They had the bucket at ringside.
Yeah. That's right. The arcade one, he had the hand buzzer where his hand would turn into a giant hand and shock the opponent. But, well, guys, I appreciate y'all hanging out with me and talking about Hasbros. Like you guys, I do love the series, even though I didn't. They're not really nostalgia for me as far as, like, I don't remember playing with them or anything, but I've definitely picked up a few over the years, and I love the look of them, and I just think they're a great series. And obviously, they're popular because Mattel's making even more of them, which I think was a shock to me. I mean, I don't think I expected these to ever come back, so it's very cool that they did.
Nostalgia is a very powerful drug.
It is. So, John, you want to... Chris, we really appreciate you coming on and talking with us. You are an action figure guy, and we're very very glad to have you as a friend of the show.
Indeed.
Oh, it's much appreciated. Always happy to talk to you guys anytime. It's always a good conversation.
And people can find you on Twitter at Zach Malibu. And, of course, Chris is with Figures Toy Company, and which they do wrestling figures now. I've talked about it before, but I picked up the Joey Ryan and loved it. I got him to sign the card and everything, and he was great, and it's a great figure. So go on, Chris, give the details of how everybody can find those.
Sure, and when you met Joey, did he have some figures at his booth as well? Because he's been getting them wholesale to take them around to some shows. I don't know how many he's traveling with, but I know he's been taking a few.
He didn't have any, and I got there I was there one of the first ones, and I didn't see any on his table. And gotcha. He was awesome because, like, I mean, and this just goes to show, like, with indie wrestling in general, most conventions, you know, you're going to pay $20-$30 for an autograph, then $20-$30 for a picture. And then, you know, but I bought a t-shirt from him and he signed my figure and gave me an autograph or gave me a picture with him for nothing other than, and he probably, if I didn't buy a shirt, I don't think he would have charged me anything. So
he's a very nice guy.
It's odd. We were talking with some people in line, and his character is so different in the ring, but he's so humble outside. Like he's kind of shy, in a way.
Yeah, I was actually going to say that he's very. I've met him in person several times. I've obviously communicated with him to get him to sign the deals and talk and stuff through email and through Twitter and whatnot. And he's always very responsive. He actually at one point. Friend requested me from his personal Facebook page. So I actually have him as like a legitimate friend on Facebook. Yeah. But I met him in person at a show here in Rhode Island and, you know, went up and introduced myself. I was like, oh, hey, man. It's like, nice to meet you. Like, thanks again. Like, you know, blah, 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 blah. And just like 2 minutes of it. Like, I'm not going to act like I'm the guy's best friend and expect him to sit and pull me aside or anything. But I saw him again in Dallas last year when I was at WrestleCon. And talked to him for a couple of minutes, and we were just talking about the figure and how the release was impending and stuff like that. He's like, oh, man, I can't wait. He's like, I'm so happy. And he's been one of the biggest supporters of the line. Like, he's ordering them wholesale. He's traveling with them. You know, we've talked about him signing some for us possibly, so we might have some autographed copies of his figure going up pretty soon. Just a really... really tremendous supporter of the line. One of the nice, I mean, everyone that I've talked to has been really cool, but he's a guy that's really gone above and beyond. And I think that shows, I think that means a lot. And I think he's more than happy to reciprocate that back to us and back to the fans. Everyone that I've talked to that has met him have said he's a great guy.
Yeah, he absolutely is.
Who?
Oh, hush.
And
I'll say this, that the what makes the figures, toy company figures, awesome are that they're in clamshells, so you can take them out, put them back in, and for signing, it's awesome because you can get them to sign the cardboard on the back and then put it back in the plastic, and it's sealed forever. Because I know a lot of collectors, they get people to sign blister packs with Sharpies, and it fades over time or scratches away, but with the way you guys package stuff is pretty genius.
Yeah, and that, you know, that's all thanks to my boss starting with the Mego figures, the retro style Mego reproductions that we do. He started that a couple of years ago because so many people were ordering the clamshells to put over the actual figure. He's like, well, what if we just actually package figures this way? And that's why, you know, to keep it quote unquote mint on card, it does come with the zip tie at the top. So it's not like, you know, you could just pop any old figure open, but yeah, a lot of people will take the cards out, have them signed with like a silver Sharpie or something like that, and then tuck it back away. But I also know that the paint pens are popular and people are getting the packages signed with the paint pens. That way, they don't fade, and that way they're actually embedded on there. So, you know, pick your poison, whatever you go for, but it's just great to see these figures out there getting autographed, getting in collectors' hands. And, you know, the more popular they remain, that means the more chance I'll have to sign other guys and expand the line in the future.
Absolutely, and I can't wait to see what next year brings. I know there's a lot on the on coming next year that you've already posted pictures of, but won't be released till sometime next year. So I'm very excited about that. What's the web address for that?
All right, the main company website is figurestoycompany.com. WrestlingSuperstore.com is a subsidiary of FTC. Most of our wrestling merchandise is on there. On the main FTC site is where you'll find those wrestling figures that we just talked about. You'll also find our officially licensed retro-style figures for DC Comics, Kiss, The Monkees, Hanna-Barbera, The Three Stooges, just a wide array of various pop culture licenses. You can keep up to date on all of the stock that we've currently got, everything that's coming new, and occasional updates from yours truly on Twitter at FiguresToyCo, at Res, W-R-E-S underscore Superstore. And like Richard mentioned, my personal Twitter is at Zach Malibu, Z-A-C-K-M-A-L-I-B-U. And if you're looking for the companies on Facebook or Instagram, just search Figures Toy Company or Wrestling Superstore by name, and both should come up for you.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you once again, Chris, for coming on. And Jonathan, do you have anything to say other than wrestling with pop culture is where people can find you?
No, I guess not. That's it for now.
All right. John, what are you...
Free Birds!
Bones, got anything to say?
Bones, do you have anything to say?
He's been quiet with no treats. I'm kind of worried, John.
I am too.
All right, guys. Well, we really appreciate everybody listening. And, you know, we hope you enjoy these figures. Shit series. I know me and Jonathan really enjoy doing them. We're going to get some more
people.
I like
Becky Lynch's figure.
Oh, Becky Lynch's figure is good. And we're going to do a Mattel one and a Jax one. And I mean, we're going to do some other ones. We probably won't go through the entire history of figures just because we do these so sporadically. But we'll definitely get to the Jax next, probably.
I was talking about another figure.
With the Becky Lynch?
No, I'm talking about Becky Lynch's figure.
Oh, the actual figure, her actual figure? All right, well, see there, you already riled Bones up. So.
I think just had to get life out of him.
On that, we really appreciate you guys listening, and we will talk to you next time.
Bye.
Good night.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.